about.
Well, here we go again.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy.
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
Adam West.
Hi, I'm Adam West. Here on the Adam West Show, I help people just like you to fight those everyday villains you meet in your hometown.
That's not the real Batman.
Great, 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 great.
Shut the f*** up, you crazy bitch.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
What do you mean, biblical?
What he means is Old Testament,
yes.
Mr. Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff. Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes,
the dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
What would you say you do here?
Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
Where's the downside? You tell me where the downside is.
Roll another one.
I was a communist for the FBI.
Just like the other one.
I had to contact the FBI.
This one seems to be about to quit.
It's our time to shine. It's our time to shine. It's our time to shine. It's our time to shine.
Let's shine.
It's our time to shine.
Let's shine.
Mitt Romney says no.
Roll another one.
Stop sucking ass.
Just like the other one.
I love it.
This one seems to be about.
Alabama Hot Pocket.
I don't have another cent.
Hi, this is Tim Allen for Kevin.
But don't bogart that joint.
Well, that's the price you pay when you think with your penis.
Just pass it around.
Plump.
But don't bogart that joint, my friend.
My crotch really, really loves it.
And now, you are not going to like what happens next.
Our feature presentation.
That's maybe the most truthful statement you'll hear on today's program. Hey, party people. Welcome in to yet another all-new Kevin and Bean Show. This time it is a Friday. Hi, Lisa May.
Hello, Bean.
How's Boner?
Oh, Boner's great. He is at my parents' house and just the happiest little thing in the world because his feet never touched the ground. This morning I went downstairs, put his bed by my mom's bed. My mom opened up her sheets and Boner went in.
Yeah, I think Boner has left you. I think you've lost Boner's allegiance.
You know, I took him home last Sunday, and Monday he was depressed. Like all day, he just looked at me. Well, I came home, he didn't run to the door. He didn't want to.
This is
go.
What happens.
I
you start
know.
Letting him stay at your parents' house, and all of a sudden, he decides he likes them better.
He does like them better. There's no doubt about it. I may just have to give him to him.
I was going
to
say, that's got to hurt when your own dog turns on you. Because let's face it, there ought to be one thing in the world you should be out of account on, and that's your dog likes you best.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. You're a bad person.
Little crappy thing.
I can't even imagine what you have to do to a dog to scar him to the point where he wants to go live with somebody else.
Leave him alone for any length of time.
How are you, Muggs?
All I heard from that.
I don't care.
Okay, well.
No, go ahead.
All I heard from that story was Boner went in. That's all
I know. I'm going to hear about it.
And there's already plenty of that going on at Lisa May's apartment anyway, so what the hell. Don't need a dog involved. Speaking of dogs,
yes.
Great story for you today, and I'll ask both of you guys a question. What do you do if you are, in the case of Steve Gustafson, in Sumner County, Florida? What do you do if you and your little dog Bounce are doing some gardening there out by your house on the water, and an alligator comes up and snatches your little dog and swims away?
No.
What
can
do you do?
Well, there's really nothing much to do after that. Unless you want to fight the alligator, there's really not a whole lot.
Is it a little alligator?
It's I think it's a medium-sized alligator. It looked to me, I saw the pictures, it looked to me like it was about a 6 or 7 footer maybe. Mr. Gustafson, who I believe is 66 years old, by the way, said, "What choice did I have? Bounce is my best friend. I didn't think. I just reacted and went in."
What
happened? Here's the story in his own words about Mr. Steve Gustafson and his little dog, Bounce.
"I was trimming the tree here in my backyard, and I heard Bounce yelp, and I looked down, and the gator was taking her out into the pond."
Now, at that point, I think most of us would go, "Oh, it sucks to be Bounce," right? Yeah. I mean, because you have to be thinking in your mind, yeah, of course, my instinct is I want to try to save my pet here, but there's a very good possibility that I die, right?
Right, and it may already be too late. I mean, he's got the thing in his mouth.
Yes, he does. He has the dog in his mouth, right? I mean, that is the type of decision that you have to kind of you have to tamp down the emotional side and start thinking logically, how am I going to help the situation if I also am killed, right? But that's not where Steve was coming from.
"And without thinking, I said, 'You're not going to get her,' and took off down the hill, did a belly flop onto the top of the alligator, got a hold of the alligator's back left leg, got her tail underneath my right arm, and then we were all underwater, but I was able to get my feet underneath me."
We're all underwater at this point. That's, I mean, the adrenaline is going to help you. It's going to get you started. But at some point you go, "I'm wrestling an alligator underwater right now."
Unbelievable.
Right? Wow. Crazy story.
"And since we were only in 3 feet of water, I just did a big push back towards the shore. And when I did that, the gator let go of Bounce and came around and bit me. But he didn't hang on. He just snapped. And when he snapped the second time, I got him with his hand, with his mouth closed, hung on like they show on TV, pushed his head down at the bottom of the pond."
By the way, how do they show on TV how to wrestle an alligator? What shows is he watching?
Jackass, maybe. I don't know.
I wouldn't know what to do. Would you guys?
No.
Nope.
No.
The only thing I would be trying to do is trying to figure out how to keep his mouth away from my body. But he
Steve Irwin, didn't he wrestle? I mean, he probably had encounters, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Lots of times.
And
you
got to keep their mouth closed.
Right. And I think that's what ends up happening, that's good news for Bounce. I don't know where Bounce is at this point, by the way. I haven't heard much about
drowning,
getting eyes on Bounce.
"And now I had his head in the bottom of the pond and his left leg in my left hand, and I had the alligator. And so I'm yelling at Bounce to come in. And she can't make it because she's got water in her lungs and she's exhausted."
All right, so it sounds like Bounce is free of the alligator now someplace else in the pond while he's holding the alligator down, but she can't swim, it sounds like.
"So I let the gator loose, and the gator took off, and I grabbed Bounce and came up here on the shore." End of story. Yeah. You like me now, don't you? Oh, like me a lot better.
Little Bounce is so cute, too, by the way.
Oh, I love that. Okay, if anything happens like that to Boner, I'm going in.
You're going to wrestle the alligator.
I am. I don't care what it is. I'm going in. Mountain lion, here I come.
Wow.
That's
how about
so
that?
Awesome.
How about an alligator comes up, snatches your dog, and you dive in and save the dog? How about that? That's a happy ending that I did not expect.
Bean, that guy's badass.
He gave us a good story.
He's 66 years old, too, by the way. Beerbug, I hope that makes you think twice about how lame you are.
Yeah.
Not diving in at half his age.
I would have run like a little girl.
Yeah, I think so. All right, good times. Let's talk about today's all-new Kevin and Bean show, shall we?
Why not, Bean? This is America.
It is America. Thank you, Doto. You're absolutely right. Of course, it's Friday. That means we've got the movie beat. A lot of new movies coming out today. Ralph will review, having seen none of them. That's next hour. We also talked to the Los Angeles Times TV critic, Mary McNamara. We had her on to predict what she thought would get Emmy nominations. Today, we'll have her on to give her predictions on what she thinks will win. I got to tell you, this year, these categories are... How do you choose? There's so much great stuff on TV. So many great people nominated in some of these categories. In most of these categories, I don't even think there is a clear-cut favorite.
Yeah, I agree.
So could be anyone's guess, but we'll talk to Mary coming up next hour. Very excited to welcome our friend, actor and comedian Rob Riggle, back to the program today. He, of course, we've had in a couple times before doing his comedy and movie stuff, but now he is on the NFL on Fox, the Fox Sunday morning pregame show, doing NFL stuff. So, and he's a long-time football fan too, so what a dream gig for him. He'll be joining us. We got the star of a BBC America show that's getting a lot of buzz right now called Copper, that I think you would like very much, Lisa.
Copper. I was going to try to watch it.
Irishman.
Yeah, I was going to try to watch it yesterday. I ran out of time, but
yeah, it looks
awesome.
It looks good. It's very different from anything else on TV. So actor Tom Weston Jones in the program today. Here's a first ever for Asuka on the Kevin and Bean Show. We've done dozens of these over the years where we bring somebody in who's got an interesting job or an interesting life experience or, oh, I don't know, has been abducted by aliens. And we give you the chance to ask them questions because in many cases you've always wanted to. Today, a Kevin and Bean listener named Matt is coming in and we will let you ask an interventionist.
Ooh.
He's the guy that you have come meet, the person in your life that is going under with drugs and alcohol, and talk them into going into treatment, which we've all seen on TV before. But imagine if that's your job every day. You have no idea what to expect when you get to that place,
and you
whether
know,
they're going to get violent or whatever.
I bet every single person listening has had somebody at some point where they thought, should we do that? Should we get an intervention? How would that go? Would it just make it worse? What happens?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And is it my place to step in?
Right.
And you know, I mean, there's lots of questions. It's a very complicated issue.
Does anybody have any drugs? I'm looking to score some drugs.
We got several. That's not good protocol for an intervention, by the way. Several more chances for you today to join us Monday for Green Day at the Red Bull Sound Space at K-Rock. That's going to be 3 o'clock on Monday afternoon, streaming at KRock.com, moderated by Stryker. You get in and you win a copy of the forthcoming Green Day album called Uno. We'll give you several chances to win that today on the Kevin and Bean Show. And Cousin Sal will be here with his NFL picks. That, my friends, is a lot of show.
Mm-hmm.
Ralph's got the showbiz beat to get us started. That's next, right after this on the world-famous K-Rock.
One more spoon of cough syrup now. Whoa, whoa.
Wow, starting the day with an all skate. Nice job there, guys. It's world-famous K-Rock, 106.7 KRQ, Friday morning, 5:53. Time for our very first look at the showbiz beat. What's going on, dude?
Before I get to showbiz news, I do have tickets to give away. More passes to the K-Rock advanced screening of Looper.
Yeah!
All happens on the Sony Studios lot on Thursday, September the 27th. You'll see the film before anybody else. Opens the next day on Friday, September the 28th. Fantastic premise for a film. This Ryan Johnson, he's a pretty smart dude. It's a time travel tale about a man who needs to confront himself, a younger version of himself, when he gets sent back in time to be murdered by his younger self.
The worst.
That is somebody with no respect for their elders.
I hate it when that happens.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Bruce Willis, Emily Blunt, Paul Dano, Piper Perabo, Jeff Daniels. Just an amazing cast. A story about the mob who uses time travel to dispose of its enemies. Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays a young assassin who is, he doesn't know what to do exactly when his older version, the older version of himself, gets sent back in time and he's got to kill him. So, Bruce Willis and Joseph Gordon-Levitt play in the same dude. Who'd have thunk? Looks awesome. Call now, 1-800-520-1067. First two callers to get through. We got a pair of passes to the advanced screening of Looper. Lady Gaga's in trouble again. She's offending people again.
Mm.
Started a couple days ago in London. She left a Fashion Week show wearing a full-body burqa, complete with silk scarves covering her face and raccoon tails dangling from the burqa.
Such a nice look.
She also carried a rhinestone-studded purse that spelled out a certain four-letter word. Begins with C.
Oh.
Hmm.
It's not cute. It's not cute.
Loves to cook.
It's not cook.
Oh.
Everybody's upset. Everybody's upset about this.
Well,
the Muslims are upset. You know who's really upset? PETA. PETA's upset.
Of course.
Because she's got raccoon tails hanging off her burqa. Gaga has a long history of feuding with the animal rights group. Now, the Chicago Sun-Times says PETA is planning a personal attack on Gaga. According to sources inside PETA, they're going to spray paint her or throw feces at her.
Oh, dude.
You know what, PETA? You have officially crossed the line from animal protector to just animal when you're starting throwing feces at people.
They don't normally, as an organization, do that kind of stuff.
But I think it sounds to me like Lady Gaga has become public enemy number one.
They've snapped. PETA's just snapped at Gaga.
I guess so.
Yeah. I think we got a preemptive strike. We have to start taking out PETA headquarters. We need to start drone bombing them. Let's send some drones in. Come on, they're terrorists. They're throwing feces at people.
Have you seen the new onstage pictures of Lady Gaga plus 50 pounds?
No.
What?
She put on 50 pounds?
Seriously?
You gotta see these photos, Ralph. Just Google Lady Gaga fat. You'll see what I'm talking about.
I don't want to.
It's shocking.
I don't want a bodysuit or something. That
no,
she's...
it's
how
just
do you know
body.
It's not raccoon meat?
Well, she's not wearing much in some of these pictures, and it's all gah.
Wow.
All gah.
The Duchess of Cambridge.
Is that Kate?
That is, yes, Kate Middleton.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't the only European woman who has got boob problems these days. Apparently Heidi Klum is livid that photographers caught her sunbathing without a bikini top as well. Photos were apparently taken on an island in the south of France, and Heidi feels her privacy was violated. Word is she's going to pursue legal action. If Kate Middleton's case is a success, she will follow suit and also sue a French magazine that has published the pictures of Heidi Klum topless.
Boobs.
Yeah. Hey, listen, Heidi Klum and Kate Middleton, let's not put any sort of chilling effect on beautiful women taking their tops off. Please. Thank you. Just relax. Just let them be free and let us all look. And then everything will be everything. Destiny Hooker in the news.
Of course, she was an Olympic hero, right?
She was the fabulous volleyball player who made a big impact at the Summer Olympics. She's off the market. She said, I do to her fiancé, Stephen Coulter, at a small ceremony in Texas. She said she will simply add Stephen's last name to her own because she loves being a hooker and doesn't want to give up being a hooker. So she will be Destiny Hooker Coulter.
It's been a long time since we've done that phone topic, but I'd like to do that again about the struggles that women have with taking their husband's name if their husband has a terrible name, because I'm sure that happens all the time.
Her name is Hooker.
Yeah, I would think she would be,
she'd be happy
to get rid
she's
of that.
She's balking
right?
at that, saying, no, I want to keep Hooker.
Yeah.
I'm going to be Hooker Coulter.
Maybe she's a big TJ Hooker fan. You ever think about that?
I've never thought about that. No, I've never thought about that. And Sugar Bear Thompson in the news.
What's Sugar Bear up to?
Of course, father of Honey Boo Boo. Ugh. I can't believe I'm saying these things sometimes.
In 5 years, you're going to look back, and this is going to be
really?
The funniest thing you've ever heard.
Is that a Sugar Bear Honey Boo Boo story?
And as a quick reminder, by the way, four kids in that family by four different fathers for June. And Sugar Bear is the only one who's stuck around.
But
so.
Sugar Bear is Alana's dad, right?
That's right, yes.
Okay, yeah. He got into a freak accident this week. What a surprise. While off-roading and had to undergo emergency surgery after an infection grew into the spot of his injury.
Aww.
Why am I not surprised that this guy's just ripe with infections? Really? You got an infection there wallowing around in the double wide? Did you get a cheese puff stuck in your wound? You disgusting pig. You white trash garbage.
That isn't good for you.
It's just nature's way of trying to thin the herd. But no, they had to stop his infection. His wife, the hideous June, says he's in good spirits. He's craving peanut butter and crackers. Of course he is. That's all he probably eats.
That's all they serve in that house.
He should be back to work in 4 weeks, she said. Sugar Bear with your infection. Oh, God damn it.
I don't know what kind of medical care is available to them in this town of 700 people, but on the episode where Chickadee started going into labor early, that's mm-hmm. the 17-year-old who's already been knocked up,
mm-hmm.
The paramedics showed up and they were still in high school. So I don't know that he has a lot of great options in terms of getting those wounds treated properly.
Here's the solution. We bomb PETA with them. We take that family and we drop them on PETA headquarters. And we clean up all of our problems with one swill foop, as they say. Today's celebrity birthdays. Jerry Bruckheimer. Super. Producer, legend, icon, mover and shaker. The CSI shows on television and the movies, the Pirates of the Caribbean films. Top Gun. His career goes on forever and ever and ever. 67 years old today. Author Stephen King turned 65. Bill Murray!
Yeah,
Bill
the
Murray!
Greats,
Bill Murray!
62 years old today. Cheryl Hines from Curb Your Enthusiasm is
40. I'm going to give her a bell, by the way.
Yes!
Well, you are. You are
very,
bold. You
very
are bold,
pretty girl.
Sir.
Very pretty woman. Very funny, very pretty, very nice.
Faith Hill is 45 years old today. Actress and talk show. No bell for Faith
yeah,
Hill.
What
are you insane?
Sorry, I was just looking at some Lady
Cheryl
Gaga
Cheryl Hines
pictures.
Gets a bell and Faith
no,
Hill
Faith
gets
Hill
no
absolutely
bell.
Absolutely gets a bell.
Well, I didn't hear
100%.
It. Did I hear
I
the bell?
I was distracted by how fat Lady Gaga is. I apologize. I'm 100% with you on Faith Hill, yes.
Actress and talk show host Ricky Lake is 44 years old today. Here's the thing, Ricky Lake had a famously failed talk show. So what did they do this year? Hey, let's give Ricky Lake a talk show.
Yeah.
What a short memory you have, Hollywood.
They waited long enough that they thought most of us had forgotten that we don't like her on our TVs.
Alfonso Ribeiro from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is 41 years old. Luke Wilson celebrates his 41st birthday. Liam Gallagher of Oasis fame turns 40. Nicole Richie, remember her in The Simple Life with
sure.
a young Paris Hilton? She's now 31 mm-hmm. years old and a mom. And Maggie Grace from Lost and Taken and soon to be seen in Taken 2, 29 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Still love it. Alice Claire, so close here on the world-famous K-Rock, 106.7 KROQ at 6:11. Big shout-out to people who may be listening to us in line waiting for their iPhone 5s today. I don't think I'm ever going to find a phone that I need to sleep out overnight.
Yeah, I agree.
Especially when they're going to be on sale again, oh, I don't know, forever.
Yeah, good point.
Blah, 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 blah.
Roland?
Blah, blah, blah.
Roland, is this you?
Me, blah, 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 traffic girl, blah, blah,
I can barely hear you, Roland. What's going on? Where are you?
I am in my basement.
Okay. Muggs, is there any way you can pump him up so we can all hear him?
Hello?
Yeah, should we hear me?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, sort of.
When are you
sort
going
of?
To finally fire Beer Mug?
Hey, Roland.
That's, you too?
That's a fantastic question, Beer Mug, or whatever your name is.
Better. I could just show up and just automatically work that program.
Yeah,
I absolutely agree. Well, what's going on today? We were just talking about the iPhone 5, which is kind of tech-related. I thought that's something you might even be interested in.
I actually am. That's the last piece I need to complete my spacecraft.
I didn't know you were turning a phone into part of a spacecraft.
Yes.
Well, Dad.
I'm going to use that as my navigational system. I'm using the GPS of the iPhone 5 as the last component for my spacecraft.
All right. Well, good luck with that, I guess. What else is going on with you, dude?
I plan to fly my spacecraft to a very special location. Nevada!
Nevada? Okay. Yes. I didn't know you did much traveling.
I'm flying to Area 51.
Okay.
Because, I don't know if you've heard it or not, but they have announced the Alien Cat House.
Oh, no.
Yes. Dennis Hoff, who runs the Bunny Ranch.
Yeah.
He is starting a brothel that has a science fiction theme.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? So the nerdiest guys in the world can finally get sex.
So the sexiest guys in the world can finally get sex. They've got three different rooms so far. A Star Wars room, an Avatar room, and a Star Trek room.
Oh, my God. What are you going to do? You'll never leave.
He doesn't need the prostitute.
I can now be Captain Kirk enjoying the love of Orion's slave girl.
I don't know who that
Come
is.
To me, my beautiful green pretty.
So is that what it's
is
that what it's going to be? Do you go in there and you put on a Star Trek uniform and then they have somebody come in who's painted green and you get to live out that nerd fantasy?
First of all, I'm not putting on someone else's Starfleet uniform. That's disgusting.
Oh, you have your own.
I'm bringing my own, of course.
Of course. Yeah, of course you're bringing your own. Yeah.
And then
yeah.
the Orion slave girls will be all mine.
I can't believe this is a real thing. You must be so excited.
They're going to have one room strictly dedicated to Princess Leia.
Really?
Princess Leia!
So they're going to have somebody who's wearing the little suit from Empire Strikes Back, and you're going to get to have sex with that girl.
First of all, it's not a suit. It's a bikini.
A bikini. Whatever you call it.
And I am going to be Jabba the Hutt to her slave girl.
Oh, God.
With my giant moist tongue.
Is there any amount of money, Lisa, that any woman could possibly get paid to have sex with Roland?
No,
how dare you!
Seriously.
Roland, will this be the second time you have sex?
How?
That's a legitimate question
because
Lisa asked.
He
Roland.
Had that girlfriend, Susan.
That's right.
Yes, you did
so
date
much
Susan.
Sex that I actually had chafing.
You never had. I don't even know that you ever even had sex with Susan.
I did have sex with Susan, and I wore her out.
Okay. I do notice she's not around anymore.
I broke it off. Whatever I did it.
You're describing it as a man who's only read about it, Roland. I got to be honest.
I cannot wait to go to this brothel of science fiction.
It does
to
sound like
go where millions of men have gone before.
It does sound like you invented this story. It's so great. It's so perfect for you. I can't imagine you won't just move there. Why would you ever come back to your mom's basement if you could live here?
Open your channels, Uhura.
I don't like the sound of that. Okay. Roland's done.
Set phasers for nap.
Let's talk big screen. Ralph is here, and it's time for the movie beat.
In a world, someone has been watching. One man who risked everything.
Sorry, I have not seen any of your films.
Without seeing the movies. Ralph Garman's movie beat.
Welcome
to my world.
A lot of new movies in Southland Cineplexes this weekend, some in limited release, like a film we've been talking about, The Perks of Being a Wallflower, the new Emma Watson, Paul Rudd film. That opens up in limited release this weekend. If you want to seek that out, you can find it probably in a smaller theater near you. But some of the bigger movies this weekend are the new Clint Eastwood film, for example, Trouble with the Chair, it's called.
I don't
about
a that
crazy old man who talks to an empty chair, and
I think you're mistaken. That was the
RNC.
I saw the trailer.
It was like 12 minutes long, just him talking to a chair, yelling at a chair, and pretending the chair was talking back to him. Right?
No, nope, this is check the title again. This is his baseball movie with Amy Adams. I think it's the one you want to talk about here.
Curve, Trouble with the Curve. It says
that's
here.
The one. That's different.
I misread. Amy Adams, John Goodman, Justin Timberlake, and Clint Eastwood. Finally, we got that Justin Timberlake, Clint Eastwood movie we've all been waiting for. Clint plays an ailing baseball scout in his twilight years who is out for one last recruiting trip. He takes his daughter along, and you know what? They've got a strained relationship, Lisa, and they need to try to reestablish their father-daughter bond over the sport of baseball.
That is unusual.
Boring! Here's Clint Eastwood telling Amy Adams that she doesn't even like baseball.
You don't even like baseball.
I love baseball. You know I love it. I never even wanted to be a lawyer. I did that for you so that you would be happy with me and that you would approve of me and then maybe you'd keep me around.
I did what I thought was right. I just didn't want you to have life in the cheap seats,
that's
all.
They were the cheap seats. Spending every waking moment with my dad watching baseball, eating food that was no good for me, playing pool, staying up too late. Those were the best seats in the house until you sent me away.
Well, I was just doing the best I know how.
Exposition! I'm glad to see Clint stretch a little bit here and play a crotchety old man who doesn't like people and has a hard time relating to others.
Yes, this will be
finally.
This has everything but get off my lawn, you kids.
That's right.
He rarely works for somebody else, though. He did not direct this one, right? He's just an actor here.
Robert Lorenz is the name of the director for this film. And you let me know how that works out if you check it out this week. House at the End of the Street, horror film with a top drawer cast. This is surprising to me. Mark Tondorol is the director, Tondorai rather. He put together a blue chip cast for this horror film. Jennifer Lawrence, of course, from Hunger Games and Winter's Bone. Elizabeth Shue, Goodfellas. Real good name. A mother and daughter moved to a new town to find themselves living next door to a house where a young girl was murdered by her parents. When the daughter befriends the surviving son, she learns the story is far from over! Here are some clips from the trailer of House at the End of the Street.
Promise me you won't tell anyone about Carrie yet.
Yeah, I promise.
Listen, we have a new neighbor, okay? Her name is Alyssa. Her mom just moved in. I want you to leave her alone, you understand me?
What exactly happened again?
The daughter of Carrie Ann. Killed both her parents.
You know that house is the reason why we can even afford to rent this house?
Really?
Double murder.
Yeah!
So we're in the time of year now where we can expect a horror movie every weekend from now till November, right?
Absolutely. Dread also opens this weekend. Dread 3D. Carl Urban stars as the legendary comic book hero Judge Dredd. And I say hero with a certain amount of conditions attached because he is a hero. It's a violent futuristic world where the police have authority to act as judge, jury, and executioner, and Judge Dredd takes full advantage of that authority. He basically, this is 2 hours of him just killing people in the name of justice in 3D. So you get a lot of gore and you get it in 3D. Olivia Thirlby also is in this film. Bell away for that. Carl Urban, as I mentioned, stars as the titular Judge Dredd in this film. He, of course, I guess most people probably best know him as Bones McCoy from the Star Trek reboot that J.J. Abrams put together. Super actor. This, you may remember, it may sound familiar to you, Stallone tried to do a Judge Dredd movie years ago that was just an abysmal failure. And this is much more in line with the comic book and what people have come to expect from this character. Here's some clips from the trailer of Dredd.
800 million people living in the ruin of the old world. Only one thing fighting for order in the chaos. The men and women of the Hall of Justice.
She has control of everything.
Somewhere in this block are two judges.
I want him dead.
Mama is not the law.
I am the law. The sentence is death.
Oh, this, Kevin's going to love this movie.
Yes, he is.
You know why?
Non-stop action.
Kevin said to me just a week ago, I like loud movies. So this certainly falls into a category of quality for Kevin, and I look like I think I will enjoy it as well.
That's how you judge how good a movie is how loud it is, Ralph. Everybody
Absolutely.
Knows that. That's why the Clint Eastwood movie is not going to be one for him.
That's right. Instead of four stars, Kevin gives us four bangs.
Right.
It's loud. And lastly, the movie that I've been most looking forward to this weekend, End of Watch. I'm a huge cop movie fan, and this movie by director David Ayer looks amazing. Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Pena play partners who, are just during a routine traffic stop, end up confiscating a small amount of money and firearms from members of a notorious drug cartel. They become marked men, and they have to watch each other's back. Anna Kendrick also stars in this film. Here's a scene from the film where Gyllenhaal and Pena are getting warned about the cartel that they accidentally got on the wrong side of.
Watch out for these guys. They operate by a different set of rules. We've got indicators he's a runner for the Sinaloa cartel.
Yeah, well, we ran it. It came up clean, dude.
You guys don't have the proper clearance for any of this information, but I'm going to throw you a bone. Cartels are operating here. We're on it. Be careful.
What does that mean, though?
It means you and your homeboy need to power down. You've just tugged on the tail of the snake. It's going to turn around and bite you back. I'm throwing you a bone here. Be grateful for what I'm giving you. I'm giving you a warning. Lay low.
Right. Yeah.
Ah! I bet it does not go well for them.
I don't like drug cartels. They're not nice.
By the way, how much do these guys look like real cops, Pena and Gyllenhaal? I mean, they really play this part like they own it.
And the script is by the guy who did Training Day, so you know there's got a pedigree in terms of cop movies. Can't wait to see it. End of Watch opens up this weekend along with Dread, House at the End of the Street, and Trouble with the Curve. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the movie beat.
All that you know is at an end.
That was Ralph Garman's Ralph Garman Movie Beat.
Friday morning on the World Famous K-Rock, it's 106.7 KROQ. Your chance to ask an interventionist coming up on today's program today. Also, actor Tom Weston Jones is going to be in studio from the BBC America show called Copper. And we'll catch up with Rob Riggle about his performance on the NFL on Fox pregame show. Lisa, I know you're excited about the Emmys.
Love the Emmys.
Emmys, by the way, air live, which is nice and refreshing for a change.
Yes.
Because everything won't be ruined on Twitter by the time we get to see it at 8 o'clock. It's actually airing 5 o'clock on the West Coast with our friend Jimmy Kimmel, who we talked to yesterday, hosting the 64th annual Emmys. And we are excited to welcome back Mary McNamara from the Los Angeles Times. Mary, hi, how are you?
I'm well, how are you?
Great. I think we talked to you in your capacity as the TV critic there at the paper. We talked to you with, was it predictions for who would get Emmy nominations? Is that the last time we had you on, I think?
Possibly.
And we talked at that time how there's so much great stuff. Some of these categories are bursting, and it seems like if you've got an Emmy office pool, it's almost impossible to guess. I mean, you look at these categories, and every one of them has three or four that you could really make the case for, right?
Absolutely. There's too much good TV right now.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Nobody's mad about that. And the beautiful thing about the Emmys is they have the ceremony that just happened this past week in the Creative Arts Emmys, and that's where they gave away the boring categories. So we're not going to have to sit through makeup and cinematography and casting and all that stuff. It's just, it's nothing but meat on Sunday, right?
Absolutely. They have pared it down.
All right. What category do you want to talk about?
I don't know. You pick a category. I mean, the problem with so many great nominees is that there are a lot of pretty predetermined front runners, and many of them are repeats. And so, I think that what's going to be interesting to see is if there are any surprising upsets.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up, because how does that work? I mean, I know there's no one mindset for Emmy voters, because there are thousands of voters. But let's say Modern Family as an example, a show that has just been cleaning up at the Emmys the past few years. Do voters sit down and they go, well, it's in the comedy category this year, and of course it deserves to be considered, but it's won so much, maybe it's time to throw out a bone for Girls or Veep or one of these new shows. Does it work like that?
I don't know how it works. My colleague Robert Lloyd and I were talking about that, you know, we still don't know how it works, because it does seem that, you know, the Emmys are supposed to serve, you know, they're supposed to honor the excellence, and there is so much excellence, it's really hard to say which show is more excellent than the other. On the other hand, there is the reality that, you know, an Emmy win can help a show that's struggling, can give people, you know, a little boost, you know, maybe the shows that aren't getting the ratings. 30 Rock certainly benefited from the Emmys over the years. They didn't have a huge audience. They never had a huge audience, but But NBC knew they were going to be an Emmy favorite, and so they kept them on. And so, you know, so with Modern Family, you know, I mean, yes, it's a fabulous show, and it dominates the supporting male category in a way that it's kind of like, well, which one of them is going to win? You know, but it's really hard to say that they don't deserve it. You know, so it's a conundrum. I would not necessarily want to be an Academy voter at this point because, you know, and it's not just Modern Family. It's, you know, Mad Men is going up for its, you know, its record-breaking best drama win. Bryan Cranston is back as the front runner in the best male lead in a drama, and which is chock full of people who deserve to win. And so it's kind of like I don't exactly know when you do have such a bevy of you know people who deserving nominees, why the same ones keep winning year after year.
Yeah, it's a good point. And Modern Family doesn't get any less excellent just because it's been on the air for another year either. All right, let's take a couple of guesses here. In comedy series, since we talked about that, you mentioned 30 Rock, Big Bang Theory also nominated, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Girls, which has got to be my favorite of these shows in the category, Modern Family and Veep. Who do you predict will win on Sunday, Mary?
For the comedy series, I would say that Modern Family is going to win again. That would be my guess. It's still, you know, it's really hit its stride. The fact that it is still so good, you know, it's proving to be a durable show. I mean, Girls, I think Girls will win something. I don't think it will win this.
I will tell you, I mean, I don't think we're anywhere near the tipping point for Girls and its popularity. I mean, it's still an HBO show that a lot of people haven't checked out. It's too youthful for a lot of people also. They're never going to get into that show. But I do think that in general, in television, you get excited when somebody new comes along that seems to have a fresh new voice that kind of breaks out and you go, hey, this person over here, even if it's not 100% for me, is doing something different than everybody else is. And I think you got to applaud that, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it would be very surprising to me if Lena Dunham walked away without an Emmy. I would imagine she's going to win for writing. That would be my guess. She could win for acting. That would be one of those upsets that I'm talking about. I mean, anything is possible, you know? I mean, I'm a huge Homeland fan. I'm hoping that Homeland will win Best Drama, and everybody, when I say this at meetings, everybody's like, yeah, that's going to happen. And it was the best drama, and it was new, and it was fresh, and it was the first telling of a post-9/11 tale on either screen, big or small, that actually worked, and that I feel like that should be awarded.
But you know, when we watched the entire series for the whole season, and they're being submitted just one episode, right, from each show, and I guess that is what kind of can make the difference too, is one show can have an amazing episode. Maybe the season was kind of flat, but they have this amazing episode, and that's when you go, wait a minute, that season wasn't that great, but that's not what it's being judged on.
Right. I mean, there is, you know, for someone like me who actually has probably watched almost all of the episodes of all of the nominees, It is a very different picture from an Academy member who, you know, these people work in television, and you know, the hilarious thing is that if you work in television, you often don't have time to watch television.
Right.
And
right,
so they
right.
really are dependent on screeners, or they are dependent on the shows that they TiVo, which, you know, are a small number, much smaller number than, say, what I TiVo. Or they, you know, or and they're also more dependent on, like, what shows are being talked about, you know, what shows
yes.
are getting the kind
the
of
buzz.
Attention in the magazines and the, you know, the covers and all that stuff. I mean, all of that influences you. And, you know, I mean, that's perfectly natural. So, I mean, that's why, I mean, Mad Men, which has never had a huge viewership. I mean, none of the cable shows have huge viewership, so I'm not picking on Mad Men. But, I mean, it has had a huge cultural imprint. People talk about it all the time. And so, you know, yeah, so the assumption is, oh, well, this must be the best show on television because everybody's talking about mm-hmm. it, you know. And so I think that, you know, I think that that does play into it. And so when you have a show that is an ensemble show like Modern Family, they do, I mean, it comes down to like almost logistics. They look at more screeners because they are looking, you know, I mean, because you're looking for performances.
Multiple categories are nominated.
Exactly,
yeah, exactly.
Multiple categories. So you're looking at how many screeners you could be looking at as many as six or seven screeners just for Modern Family, just to judge the nominees.
That makes sense.
As opposed to one screener for, you know, a show where they've only got one nominee.
Betty White's off their rockers is the one you're thinking of, right? let me ask you before
we. I'm always thinking of Betty White's off the rockers.
Before we get your pick for best drama series, Mary, let me ask if this is faulty thinking of mine. Does a show like Homeland have less of an advantage in that category just because it's on Showtime and it doesn't have the advertising that HBO does? It doesn't have maybe the number of people who kind of are expect that kind of quality from Showtime that they do from HBO. Does that hurt it as well?
I don't think so. I mean, I think everybody across the board was pretty much blown away by Homeland. I don't know how much advertising plays into it with the Emmys. I don't think it's as much as with the Oscars. But I think that, you know, there is, I mean, the bigger question is, you know, the cable networks versus the regular networks, which, I mean, there's only, what is there, one nominee in the major categories from a network? Poor old Juliana Margulies. She's carrying the entire fate of the networks on her shoulders. So then that is more of the issue, is like, is the assumption now that the good shows are happening on the premium channels?
And I'm going to say largely shows. Yes. Largely yes. The answer is yes.
I'm going to disagree with you. There are plenty of good shows on the networks. But it's hard. It's hard when you're churning out 22 episodes a year versus, you know, 12 episodes a year where you don't have to deal with, you know, the cable shows don't have to deal with procedural elements. They can use sex and, you know, profanity violence in ways that the networks can't. So it's an unfair comparison in many cases.
All right. You gave us your prediction for best comedy series is Modern Family. Here are your nominees for best drama series: Boardwalk Empire, Breaking Bad, Downton Abbey, Game of Thrones, Homeland, Mad Men. What say you?
I say Homeland should win, but it won't, I don't think. I think, you know, it would be a big surprise if Mad Men doesn't win, because I think that so many people have been rooting for this show for so long that they actually want to see it break the record.
Mm-hmm. But and the record would be five wins in a row, right, for best drama series, right?
Exactly. And so I think, you know, I mean, that's fun when that happens. So and Mad Men deserves, it's not, you know, we're going to vote for this crap show just so it breaks the record. I mean, Mad Men is a very good show. You know, Breaking Bad could upset, I think, is what people are.
I'm not hearing a prediction from you, Mary.
I'm saying Mad Men. That's
Mad
what I
Men
think
it
will
is.
Win. I think Homeland should win.
LA Times TV critic and senior culture editor Mary McNamara talking about this weekend's Emmys. They air with our friend Jimmy Kimmel hosting Sunday night at 5. And I guess you'll be, as is often the case, you guys will be live blogging at latimes.com during the show, right?
We will. And tweeting away. And also I'll be reviewing it. So
fantastic.
There will be plenty to see on latimes.com.
Have a great Sunday night. Always great to talk to Mary. Thanks for the time, my dear.
Lovely. Thank Bye-bye. You.
Thanks, Lisa. Rob Riggle joins us right after the top of the hour to talk NFL on Fox. Ralph is here now with the Showbiz Beat. What's going on?
We were talking a little earlier about Clint Eastwood's new movie, Trouble with the Chair.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the ramifications of Clint Eastwood's speech with the Republican National Convention continues to resonate throughout the country. Here's an example. In Austin, Texas, a family on their front lawn has demonstrated an empty chair dangling from a rope from a tree.
Oh.
Along with a U.S. flag. It's not a stretch to assume that the empty chair symbolizes President Obama, suggesting a not-so-subtle lynching of sorts. A similar display appeared in Virginia this weekend. Well, let's give the Austin man the benefit of the doubt, saying that he's not really implying that Obama should be lynched from a tree, bringing to mind, of course, the horrific activities of the KKK at the turn of the century and other horrible racist attitudes. So the reporters in the story called the Austin man to give him a chance to explain about his display, and he said, "I don't really give a damn whether it disturbed you or not. You can take your concerns and go straight to hell and take Obama with you. If you don't like it, don't come down my street." Well, that clears everything up. Thank you so much, sir. Appreciate that.
Oh, man, not another election. Why do we have to choose our leaders? Isn't that what we have the Supreme Court for?
Yes. What's going on with Amanda Bynes?
You tell us.
We'll find out today, right?
Yeah, she's in court today to face those two charges of hit and run, one in April and one in August that she collected. But that hasn't slowed her down from being just a nut job. She was in a spin class this Tuesday, And according to other members of the class, she stripped down while taking the spin class, took off her T-shirt, revealing just a tiny black strapless push-up bra, and then began doing her makeup in the middle of the exercise routine. So People Magazine called her up and got an interview to see if there was anything wrong with the former Nickelodeon star. And she said, no, there's nothing wrong. In fact, she said, I'm amazing.
I couldn't be doing better.
Couldn't be better. She is now, she's retired from acting. What's she going to do now?
No one will hire her because she's a nut job?
She is planning to launch a clothing line.
Okay.
She's moving to New York to launch a clothing line, Amanda says.
What's the matter with you? Are you crazy or something?
She said she won't even address the DUI charges that she got because she says she doesn't drink.
She
does not drink. That's why she won't even discuss those charges.
Hello, David Hasselhoff.
You liar!
So, I guess everything's fine. We've all been worried for nothing. Amanda's great. Congratulations. And Mariah Carey is already making suggestions to change American Idol, where she is now one of the judges, to try to make it more hip, more relevant, more popular. RadarOnline.com did a story today where she said Ryan Seacrest should dye his hair a funky color, dress more casually, and try to appeal to a younger audience. Producers apparently don't agree. However, I do. I think Ryan Seacrest should dye his hair purple and wear a spandex muumuu. That would be entertaining to me.
Sure.
Cat fight of the day goes to Piers Morgan and Kelsey Grammer. He was scheduled to be interviewed on Piers' CNN talk show. He was in the green room, ready to come out, and he was watching the pre-show tape roll, and a photo of his ex-wife, Camille, appeared in the preview. Kelsey stormed out of CNN studios. Just took off.
Yeah, he's overly sensitive to that breakup. Piers, not ready to forgive and move on.
Piers released a statement saying, I like Kelsey Grammer, but this was a shockingly unprofessional thing to do. Meanwhile, Kelsey's representative Stan Rosenfeld shot back to the Hollywood Reporter that Piers needs to take responsibility for what he did. How dare you pose a pertinent question to a person you're going to interview? You take responsibility for that.
And by the way, he appeared on his wife's reality show. It's not like it's some, you know, behind the closed doors secret.
Yeah.
That they were a couple. That's legitimate to mention.
And Scarlett Johansson is headed to Broadway. Oh, boy. She is going to star in a revival of Tennessee Williams' Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. Let me tell you something. The role of Maggie the Cat in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof by Tennessee Williams is one of the most dramatically demanding roles an actress can play. Scarlett Johansson.
Not so much.
Is lovely. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
It'll be opening December the 18th at the Richard Rogers Theater. Previews will begin then, and then opening night is January the 17th of next year. So if you want to see ScarJo in the flesh, and Maggie,
and a lot of people will.
Maggie does strip down to her at least her slip in the course of that play, so you can check that out. Yeah, I bet tickets will sell.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
This is her second foray onto
Broadway
theater,
show.
Right?
Her second Broadway show. Yeah, yeah. So. They keep bringing her back. I'm just saying. Today's celebrity birthdays, Maggie Gray. Speaking of Maggies, she is, of course, was on Lost and played Liam Neeson's daughter in Taken. Will reprise that role in Taken 2. 29 years old today. Nicole Richie, daughter of Lionel Richie, TV personality in her own right with a simple life. She is 31 years old. Every time we play a Lionel Richie song, her dad gets a little richier. Liam Gallagher, 40 years old today. Luke Wilson is 41. Ricky Lake, actress and talk show host, is 44. Country singer Faith Hill is 45 years old today. Cheryl Hines from Curb Your Enthusiasm fame is 47. Actor Bill Murray. How much do we love Bill Murray?
All
the love.
Couldn't love him anymore.
62 years old. Stephen King, very prolific and successful horror author, is 65 years old today. Jerry Bruckheimer, movie and TV producer extraordinaire, turns 67 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the show business.
Michelle Raymonette, from Fullerton. Won tickets to join us Monday here in the building as Green Day invades at K-Rock. Red Bull Sound Space at K-Rock is going to be Monday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Green Day performing live. Michelle also gets a copy of the Uno album. Your chance to win coming up in minutes. First, though, how happy does that music make you guys? NFL Sunday. And the wriggle error has begun. You know, the comedy that Frank Caliendo has been doing for the last 9 years, and for 4 years, Jimmy Kimmel before that, is now being done by our friend Rob Riggle, comedian, actor, writer, host of the ESPYs this year. Rob, welcome back to the Kevin and Bean Show, my friend. How are you?
Oh, good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, it's a delight. I was so happy when I tuned in for the first game of the season on the pregame show, like I always do, because I love those guys on Fox, and I saw that you had gotten the job. I hadn't even heard about it in advance, but it was a very pleasant surprise for me. Congratulations. You must be so psyched.
Good. Well, yeah, I am, and thanks, by the way, for saying that. Yeah, I'm totally psyched. It's like a dream job. Getting to play with those guys, they're very funny, and then getting a chance to be around the NFL and do bits every week. That's always a good time.
You, I can't remember who you said on episode one when you were doing that sketch at Beckham's house. Did you say you were a Chiefs fan? Who did you say you were rooting for?
I am a Chiefs fan.
Tell me what it's like to be a Chiefs fan.
Yeah, it's not easy. I'm not gonna lie. It's an uphill battle. Although we're 0-2, and this week the forecast isn't very good for this week. I still think we're going to do it. I still believe, until it's mathematically impossible, I still believe we're going to do it every year.
Yes, well, that's what sports is all about, is every year at the beginning of whatever season it is, you go, I know we suck, but seriously, it's theoretically possible that we might win something.
What's
it like for you? By the way, tell me about you as a kid growing up. Were you, like many of us, really into sports? Did you watch a lot, play a lot? This is something you've been kind of preparing your whole life for?
Yeah, well, I don't know if you prepare your whole life for it, but I definitely. I mean, I think I was like most kids. I was like three sports, a year, kind of the seasonal sports: football, basketball, baseball, and then ding door ditching people in the summer.
Yeah,
I think that's what you did as a kid.
Exactly,
right?
Totally, yeah.
Those are my sports.
You're coming in after Caliendo, who's one of the great impressionists of working today, and.
Oh, yeah.
And now you got to figure out a way to kind of make that spot your own every week. What kinds of things do you want to do on the Fox NFL Sunday?
Frank is he's a genius. He's a savant when it comes to impersonation. I don't do impersonation, so it's real easy. I'm not stepping into those shoes. I don't think anybody could. I just want to do. I want to do my thing, whatever that is. And for me, it's just having fun.
Yeah.
So whatever it calls for that week. If there's something going on with the refs, if there's something going on with a particular player, if a coach does something, dumb, like bum rush the last play of the game or something like that, like we saw this week, it's just fun to come up with an angle and then comment on it. The first week, I was myself. Last week, I played a character. You never know. Each week's going to be different. We're going to mix it up.
I got a clip, and I thought it was a very funny bit you did where you are playing the head of the replacement refs, and you're in the complaint call center, and you're actually a guy who works at Foot Locker. That's your job. And I guess they drafted you to be one of the replacement ref guys because, you've already got the outfit. And here you are taking calls from people throughout the league during the game.
I'm taking calls 24-3 to make things better around here. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw it. The crossbar rejected Vernon Davis on his TD celebration right after it helped squeeze through a 63-yard field goal by David Akers. It's like I've always said, the goalposts are racist. But what can we do? We can't throw a flag at it. Can we throw a flag at the goalpost?
Very funny. And by the way, you're in the unenviable spot of making your predictions on who's going to win each week on national television where you're 100% held accountable. It's not like mouthing off in the office or, in your case, on the set of a movie or something like that. When you come out and go 0-4 in the opening week, everybody knows about it, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and believe me, people are so kind in the social media world. I heard about it all week long. And the past week, the second week went much better. I went 3-1 in the second week.
Yeah, and by the way, I wanted to give you props for that, because here's the way it works for folks who don't watch the Fox NFL Sunday. You kind of lead off with your piece and you make your predictions, and then all the other guys on the panel. And if I'm not mistaken, by the way, Bradshaw, Howie, Jimmy Johnson, Michael Strahan, they've all won Super Bowls, right? So you think that they've got some credibility. You're just a yahoo, all right? You're the only one who picked Seattle over Dallas. You're the only one who picked Carolina over New Orleans. All four of those other guys went the other way, and you were right.
Thank you very much for acknowledging that. I appreciate that. Yeah, I have no idea what I'm doing for the most part. I'm not some Vegas odds maker. When I go to the dog track, the dog that goes pee on his way to the gate is the one I put my money on. So I have no system here.
Yeah, you're really just flipping coins, and however it lands, that's what you say on national television.
Absolutely. So,
well,
people are trying to make me into some odds maker, which I'm definitely not.
I was really impressed. Believe me, I was sure happy to see you pick the Seahawks, because that made me very, very, very happy. I'm just excited for you, Rob, because we've been big fans of yours for a long time, and it seems like such a fun gig, and the chance to kind of hang out with those guys and be in that environment and talk sports. I mean, what's better than that? And the truth be known, we couldn't get Aaron Andrews, and that's why we had you on.
I actually got to meet her. She's so nice and cool. I don't blame you. I would much rather have interviewed her. You should.
Yeah, we've had her in before, and believe me, we're working hard on getting her in again. You may not hear from us again, Rob Riggle. I'm just telling you, if the Aaron Andrews thing goes through, this may be the last Kevin and Bean time you ever get. Fox NFL Sunday is a fantastic pregame show. Get you set up for the whole day. Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock on the Fox Network. Rob Riggle, great to talk to you, man. Thanks for coming on.
Great talking to you. Thanks, guys.
You're listening to the world-famous K-Rock at 106.7 KROQ. Your chance to ask an interventionist. No, not kidding. We've never done that before. Coming up next hour here on the world-famous K-Rock. Also, your chance at Green Day and the Red Bull Sound Space at K-Rock tickets in a few minutes. And Cousin Sal with your NFL picks for the weekend all on the way. Lisa, are you very excited by who's sitting next to you?
I am. He's kind of dreamy.
Tom Weston Jones has joined us. He is an awesome actor who is British.
Oh, yeah, that too.
but plays Irish-American on a BBC America show called Copper.
Hello.
How are you, Tom? Welcome to the show, man.
I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me, man.
I was saying, this is such a low-rent program. You don't know. We're usually talking to imaginary turtles and stuff on this show. And then we get a guy like you in who has some actual acting background, and he's all posh and British, and he's on BBC America, and I feel like we're not worthy. So you're raising our game here today, my friend.
It's all a show. You guys, it doesn't matter. It's just BBC America.
But BBC America, you know, we look at that, we go, well, that's for smart people. With the exception of Doctor Who, and I know we have a lot of our listeners who are watching Doctor Who on that channel, they don't see a lot of BBC America, and that's one of the reasons why the network is trying to break through with, this is their first original production for America, right?
Yeah, it's the first one.
What do you tell folks when you're meeting them? Like now, you got a lot of people listening, haven't heard of Copper. How do you break it to them what it's all about?
It's a funny thing to summarize. I find it really difficult to actually come up with one genre that the film covers, because it's an amalgamation of different things. It's a police procedural in some respects, but it's also a family drama. It's also a period piece. It jumps all over the place, and that's what I like about it. Is it's kind of sandwiched together, and at certain points, the people who tune in just for pretty dresses are going to get a big surprise. this sock in the mouth.
I watched episode one yesterday because we were going to have you in, and now I think I'm going to have to go back and catch up and get current before I start seeing him on the TV again. But it's dark, and I wasn't expecting that. I mean, for people who think – I mean, this is not Downton Abbey, my friends. I mean, this is in the gutter. I mean, this is fist fights and people getting shot and robbed and prostitutes getting murdered. I mean, it's gritty stuff.
Yeah. It goes to some very dark places, and I don't know. I think that's what I quite like about American television, is that they nowadays is that you guys really do take risks in terms of what you choose to do, and American TV really is kind of like the new cinema, because so much more is being put into it, and the stories are becoming far more detailed, and you get to live as these characters for a much longer period of time than you would in a film. And yeah, I just love it. I love it. I really hope we get to do it again.
How do you get yourself in the mindset? I mean, you've already got a lot to think about. I mean, you're trying to keep your accent straight. You got, as you mentioned, you got a ton of different plot lines in here. How do you get yourself in the mindset of 1864? I would think that would be the hardest thing, because it's so easy to lapse into modern day colloquialisms, into act in a way that's you know,
today.
Yeah, even gestures, I think, were something you would have to police very closely.
Well, do you know what? It's something I find quite funny is when people talk about period pieces, is that how do you act a certain way? How do you jump back in time? And I find it strange to say that people... Obviously, people were different in the higher classes. There was a particular way of living life, and it was all about airs and graces and things like that. But I don't think people have actually changed all that much. And I think if you approach something and go, how do I act 1864? How do I do this? First, you have to approach it on a human level and try and just ground it and make it real and make it normal. And of course, there are certain things that you can't walk into a scene and go, what up, blood?
Right.
High five.
I think the writing is such that as long as you stick within the parameters of what Will Rokos has structured, the writer, and Tom Fontana, it's so vibrant and rich, the dialogue they've constructed. And Carl Bradstreet and Kevin Diabolt as well, the writers. As long as you stick to the rules, you'll be fine.
And I imagine the costuming also helps a lot to just
put you in the mindset. Yeah.
It changes the way you move. And,
right, because it's constricting in different ways.
Yeah, you feel like a granddad when you first put it on. Everyone says, do you feel like, as soon as you put the costume on, do you feel like you're that character? The first phase is putting the trousers on, and that makes me feel like a 70-year-old man. Because you can come up, like, above your belly button. This doesn't look graceful at all. But then you put everything else on, and it feels heavier.
It works together, right.
Yeah.
This is the voice of this very sexy voice is Tom Weston Jones here on the Kevin Beach Show talking about his show on BBC America. Again, it is called Copper, and it airs Sunday nights at 10 o'clock. Real quick, and we're going to come back and talk some more with you about Copper, but I'm also fascinated. One of the things that I think is going to be neat to see unfolding about 1864 is the slaves have already been freed. We're post-Emancipation Proclamation, but you can't just snap your fingers and change people's minds and perceptions that they've lived with their whole life. There's still going to be a great deal of racial tension in a city like New York. Just because the government says you're free doesn't mean everybody's going to treat black people, you know, as equals. And that's what's fascinating to see, not only in the big scale, but also with you and the guy that you work very closely with, who's kind of your assistant, or how would you describe the man I'm talking about?
There's a really good Family Guy sketch where there's jumps back in time, and it's a farm owner freeing a slave, and he goes, "So we're cool, right?" And you're totally right. That's what something I like about the show is that it shows how if you squeeze people into a particular situation, it's unlikely they're going to get along depending on the circumstances. If you take money away and you make people more desperate, it's likely that there will be combustion and they're not going to get along. But yeah, I find the relationship with Arto fascinating because sometimes we actually adhere to the stereotypes and actually... that dark side does come out, and our friendship becomes tainted in a way when we actually...
Because you kind of fall back into the way it's always been up until recently, and then sometimes there's a reset button, and you go, hey, we're equals, and he's like, I'm maybe smarter than you are, dude, so watch it.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
Which I think is kind of a really fascinating dynamic that I don't know that I've seen on a television show before.
It's true. Like you can see how much they use each other, and I do think there's an element of bromance... Maybe that's the wrong word to use. Bromance is a little bit too loving. Whenever anyone says, "Oh, he's your best friend," I kind of go, "No, he's not. He's a sort of companion, I suppose."
Yeah, you have admiration for one another. You respect each other, but I don't know that you're not 100% comfortable.
Isn't it?
You're
not able to actually bring yourself to go like, you know, we're close, but there's something there deep down. There's just a lot of layers to get away before you can actually.
A lot of great characters on this show. A lot of great storylines going on. You can see there's a lot of different places you can go with it. Tom Weston Jones is here again. The show is called Copper. We're getting classy on the Kevin and Bean Show here today. It's on BBC America Sunday nights. More with our guest after this. On the world famous K-Rock. Tom Weston Jones in studio with us. He is the star of Copper on BBC America, which airs Sunday nights at 10. By the way, besides the accent, Tom, very posh having a hyphenated last name. How'd that happen? How'd you do that?
Well, do you know what? I'm not as posh as I perhaps sound because, and I was a bit worried about that when I changed my name because it does have that posh element to it.
Like totally.
Like you're an earl or something. And that's not my background at all. Because I'm Welsh, actually. But my real name is Tom Jones. And I obviously
for obvious reasons, you didn't want to use that.
Go around. And the amount of times I like go to an eye appointment and I turn up and I go, yeah, Tom Jones here. And they just go, oh.
The real Tom Jones.
But my middle name is Weston, so I just hyphenated it.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
By the way, we had, and I haven't thought about this for a long time, but when you mentioned Tom Jones, we had him on the show a few years ago. And he's,
no way.
I mean, he's got to be in a... He's got to be close to 70 now, I would think, right?
And he's still doing it.
He has an amazing voice.
Incredible voice. Very, very hard.
And he's one of the richest people in Britain, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, I think he's in the hundreds of pounds kind of deal. And we tried really, really hard.
Was that hundreds of pounds? Just hundreds?
Hundreds of millions of pounds. We tried really hard to get him to give us $1 million. We were like, come on, seriously, give us $1 million. You would never miss it. And I think we came close to convincing him that it wouldn't hurt him and it would make us so happy. But he didn't do it. He ended up not giving us $1 million.
How selfish.
That's what I'm saying. All right, let's talk some more about copper.
Sure.
1864, the Five Points neighborhood of New York City. And I should mention, because I can't believe I didn't say this first time around, the jumping off point for a lot of people is this is Gangs of New York time. I mean, mm-hmm. the same area that was kind of covered by the Daniel Day-Lewis character and others in that movie. I mean, that's kind of probably the easiest way to describe to people where you guys are living back then, right?
Yeah, it is. And you know, I find it interesting when people say it's Gangs of New York, really, the TV show. And it's not. It's not the same thing, because I love Gangs of New York as a film, and I think it's brilliant. I didn't rewatch it on purpose, because I knew there'd be comparisons stylistically and thematically and all that. So I tried to just avoid it and tried not to look at Bill the Butcher as an amazing character as he is. Like, I could watch Daniel Day-Lewis all day. But that is a very, I think it's quite a theatrical thing, as a lot of films are. They've only got 2 hours to fill this this world, so yeah. they build it up as much as they can. But with us, because we've got 10 hours, 10 45-minute episodes, really, it's a lot more like a fly on the wall, and there's a lot more time taken with it.
Sure.
Not that I'm bad-mouthing Gangs of New York.
No, I was just saying...
Different format.
Just in terms of our audience knowing kind of the location on the map and the time frame are similar between the two.
I could think of a lot worse films to compare it to. Exactly.
Absolutely, yeah.
Gangs of New York, of course.
Tell us about Kevin Corcoran. He's your character. He is a detective. He's a copper. He's a policeman.
Yeah.
What do we know about him? Is he super, super smart? Does he have those kind of amazing mental abilities? Is he just a logical guy? Because he seems to use his fists as much as he uses his brain.
Yeah. I think he's actually not that much of a cerebral detective. He doesn't sit down and ponder. He's not like a Hamlet kind of person. The way I approached the character is I looked at the fact that he was a bare-knuckle boxer and how that would inhabit his entire life, really. So he's a very guttural person. He follows his instincts, and his instincts are kind of what guide him. So he's able to make split-second decisions based on just going with his gut. And basically, he was a bare-knuckle boxer for years, went to fight in the Civil War, and whilst he was away fighting, he found out that his wife had disappeared and his daughter was dead. And upon returning to New York, he's made a detective. And the show begins when he's just trying to find any scrap of information that he can. And one thing that I love about him is that he's incredibly flawed. And his role as a detective and his role as a desperate father and husband, those two things don't get on. He's actually stretched in both directions quite a lot of the time. And it's always great to play someone with contradictions and hypocrisy.
Sure.
Because they make you real. Makes you a real person.
Mm-hmm. He's very much a dog with a bone, though, when he gets an idea in his head.
Yeah.
He does not let it go.
Yeah.
And I like that even though he misses his wife and is searching for his wife, he still does take that 5 minutes a day to stop by the whorehouse.
Yeah, I
appreciate that about him, too. He's got, himself a special lady friend.
It makes him more of a normal person, really, because he still has urges, doesn't he?
Like, certainly.
I personally don't think there's... In the real world, there are no heroes. There can't be, because no one has a completely straight moral compass. That doesn't exist, and especially in Five Points, where everything was about getting by and stepping over people's heads and doing all that kind of thing. So yeah, going to the whorehouse. That what I like about the show is the fact that that is kind of seen like an everyday thing. That's the center of Five Points is this whorehouse, and Eva, who is the brothel owner, she's basically who he turns to for information, which is ridiculous when you think about it.
And she's Franca Potente, is that her name?
Franca Potente, yeah.
Yeah, from the Bourne movies. She's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right, great. Before we go, here's a clip. This gives you a little bit of idea of the style of Corky, as they call him, Kevin Corcoran, the character that Tom Weston Jones, our guest, plays. Here he is interrogating a guy. He's trying to track down who killed a prostitute with a cane. And some information comes into his hands that leads him to the guy who made the cane. He wants to find out who he sold it to. Mm. Listen to how this goes.
Yes, yes, I made that cane. The head of a wolf, one of a kind. Anniversary gift.
Given by who to who?
I'm not at liberty to say.
This is a police investigation, sir.
My clientele is of the highest order.
You can talk. Or you can pray.
Okay, there you go. That's you can talk or you can pray. That's the one way to get information, is a gun to the man's head. So, well done. Tom Weston Jones, so great to meet you, man. Very excited
Guys,
about the show.
Thank you for having me on. It's been great.
BBC America, Sunday nights at 10 o'clock. You can watch the episodes online, too, and you should. Thanks for coming in. Have a great week and have fun at the Emmys, too, man.
Thank you.
Check out our Field of Dreams.
Fletcher Jones Motorcars, Mercedes-Benz, Newport Beach.
I'm Lisa May with K-Rock Traffic.
I like to check out Lisa's Field of Dreams. You know,
that's really dumb.
So sad.
If you build it, they will drive.
Ask an Interventionist, coming up next to the Kevin Abid Show. Yeah. That means a fascinating interview and call-in topic, but also a new Omar intro, which I'm very excited to hear as well.
Matt was in the other room, our interventionist. He's sitting me down, trying to...
Already?
Read me a letter.
Does he do it to
everyone? Me a letter for my parents and stuff.
He could tell.
Like, hey, come on.
He just from looking at you, he could tell you needed his services.
I don't need your intervention.
That is coming up next here on the World Famous K-Rock. Right now, Ralph's got the Showbiz Beat for a Friday.
Speaking of me being a hopeless drunk who's very angry... If you'd like to see me drunk and angry, come to my house Sunday when I'm watching the Eagles game. Or you can go Saturday night to the Canyon Club in Agora Hills, California. We're taking the Hollywood Babylon show with me and Kevin Smith deep into the valley Saturday night. We're going to be at the Canyon Club, one of my favorite venues to attend as an audience member. Now I get to perform there. We're doing our Hollywood Babylon show.
So. Sunday! No, Sunday! Again, Sunday!
I believe I said Saturday. Saturday night is when it's all happening. You can go to canyonclub.net to get your tickets. It's a good time. Kevin usually...
It's Friday.
No, it's Saturday.
Don't be confused.
No, don't be confused. It's Saturday, really. It's pretty simple. Saturday.
Okay. Sounds like a case of the Mondays.
No, not Monday. Saturday would be the date. Kevin gets stoned, I get drunk, and then we make fun of people. So it's filthy. So come on and bring the kids.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm kidding. 18-year-olds. No, really, 21 is best.
Okay.
Actually, 25.
No, I really am
like
confused.
30. You should be a grown up.
No one under 50 should see this show, basically, is what you're saying. It's that dirty.
And more tickets to give away to the advanced screening of Looper.
Yay!
This movie looks outstanding. I can't wait to see it. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, just turning into one of the best actors working in film today, plays a young Bruce Willis. Basically, he is an assassin. The mob of the future sends their victims 30 years into the past using time travel technology to eliminate them rather than murdering them in the present day where cops could get them. They send them into the past where assassins kill and then dispose of the bodies. Here's the problem. When you're an assassin that works for the mob, sometimes they think that you have outlived your usefulness. They close the loop on you, hence the name Looper, and they send you into the past to be killed by your younger self.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Actually, Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis have time for that. They play the same person at different stages in their life battling against each other. What a great concept from Rian Johnson. If you'd like to check out the film, we're doing a special advanced screening on Thursday, September the 27th. It's the day before Looper's in theaters on the 28th. If you'd like to go, call right now, 1-800-520-1067. I believe we have three. I think we have three pairs of passes left, if I'm not mistaken. So call right now and get those, won't you?
That is amazing.
I usually don't do a lot of art news, but you know how much I love art.
Yeah.
Do we?
Nope. Japanese artist Mao Sugiyama.
Oh, he or she is good.
Mao is a gentleman, or was a gentleman. 23-year-old Mao Sugiyama has been charged in Japan with indecent exposure after serving up a controversial meal over 2 months ago.
Uh-oh.
Five diners paid over $200 each for the honor of eating leftovers of Mao Sugiyama's elective surgery. He cooked and served his own flesh to some diners. He's now facing 2 years in prison for the meal.
Who's hungry?
case you're wondering what kind of flesh he served up to the diners, let's say he used to be a man.
Oh, no,
but
no.
Now he's not anymore.
No, no, no.
He had elective surgery to complete the process of going transgender from man to woman. And rather than just disposing of the excess parts that were left over after this elective surgery, he cooked it up and served it to diners who were willing to pay $200 each for the honor of devouring his leftovers.
Okay. But where's the crime? They knew what they were getting into, right?
Did they? Did they know they were eating genitals?
Yes. Tokyo police have confirmed that the artist and all the people he fed were aware of what was going on, and they're all facing charges now on just a felony count of yuck.
I didn't know yuck was against the law.
In Japan, yuck is a big thing.
Mmm, delicious.
No, it's really not. What's wrong with people?
I deserve delicious sausage.
What's going on?
People like
what
exotic
What is going
food?
On? The world is coming to an end.
It is. It is.
Is meat on the menu this week?
Stop it. I'm bothered. On every level. Amanda Bynes also bothers me. She's losing it. She's lost it. Her staff, by the way, her team of handlers, her agent, her lawyer, her manager, they have all officially quit this week.
Oh, really?
The rats are leaving the sinking ship. Amanda says that's fine because she is retiring from acting. She's giving up her acting career. She's moving on to a line of clothing that she's designing. She's going to move to New York and become a clothing designer. She's going to launch a fashion line.
Does anyone besides her know that?
Well, I think it's going to be invisible clothes. She's going to be sitting there in an invisible sewing machine talking to herself. She made more headlines this week in a spin class at the gym. She seems to go to the gym quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
We know she's been talking to herself at the gym. She has been laughing hysterically while on the elliptical machine at nothing in particular. Tuesday, apparently, she was at a spin class when she decided to strip off her T-shirt, revealing just a tiny black push-up strapless bra.
Okay.
I pulled out a mirror and started doing her makeup in the middle of the exercise routine.
Shut the f*** up, you crazy bitch!
So, needless to say, it was a distraction in class, but everyone said, well, that's Amanda.
Right.
It's the name of her new sitcom. That's Amanda! Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba! Boom.
That's crazy!
Yeah. And it's getting really rough over there at the X Factor. Tough times at the X Factor. I told you yesterday that it looks like it's going to be Mario Lopez and Khloe Kardashian as the hosts of that show when they start doing live shows.
Mm-hmm.
Now apparently Britney Spears having a bit of a meltdown. She had a birthday party for her sons Preston and Jaden. They were born just 2 days apart, a 7-year-old and a 6-year-old. So she sprung for a indoor trampoline park with pizza, ice cream. And the cake, which was themed for what the boys love, was a Call of Duty video game themed cake.
Okay.
They're 7 and 6, and they're rocking out young, the Call of Duty.
A little young for Call of Duty?
Yeah, yeah. That's young.
Yeah.
She's a good parent. Someone says that Kevin's here. And apparently someone stole a microphone, too, from X Factor.
What?
Yeah. One of the people who was auditioning.
Walked away with the microphone.
Stole the microphone.
Nice.
Producers were so cheesed off that they had to call the police, and they hunted down the young man who came back to the facility and then returned the microphone. Luckily for him, the producers decided not to press charges. So, could have been worse.
Yeah.
I suppose. He could have continued on that show. So. Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthdays.
Ralph is having
I'm trying to find the celebrity birthdays.
Paper issue here. He just goes through paper after paper.
There we go. Stephen King, the legendary horror book author, is 65 years old today. Leonard Cohen, songwriter and poet, is 78. Jerry Bruckheimer, movie and TV producer. And the Pirates of the Caribbean movies and CSI shows. Guy's got a lot of money. 67 years old. Bill Murray. Come on with the Bill
Murray.
Batman.
I'm a scientist.
That's right. He's 62.
A lot of buzz for him as a potential Oscar nominee this year with his movie where he plays President Roosevelt, getting ready to come out here soon.
Yeah, what's it called? White House on the Hudson?
Something like that, yeah. Can't wait. Looks great. The
trailer looks terrific, yeah. Bill Murray is 62. Cheryl Hines is 47. Faith Hill is 45. Ricky Lake is 44. Oh, conspicuously absent bell there for Ricky Lake.
Good choice.
Luke Wilson's 41. Liam Gallagher of Oasis turns 40. And Nicole Richie is 31. Maggie Grace from Lost and the upcoming Taken 2, where she reprises her role as Liam Neeson's daughter. She is 29 years old. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
One of the biggest bands in the world, Green Day, is going to be here at K-Rock on Monday, 3 o'clock, streaming through krock.com. You can watch them perform live in the Red Bull Sound Space at K-Rock. Our man Stryker is going to be handling the interview. You're going to be there up close and personal with the guys and get a copy of the new album, Uno. Congratulations to Augustine Salazar, the latest winner. He's in Paramount. Your chance to win coming up in a few minutes. Hi, Matt Brown.
Hey, Bean.
Matt is a Kevin Bean listener who listens to us. What? Do you listen to the podcast or you stream us online from your home there in Austin, Texas?
I listen to the podcast.
God bless you. Thanks so much. You contacted us. You reached out to us a couple of weeks ago and said, hey, I got something you guys might be interested in. Ask an interventionist. That's what you do? You're an interventionist for a living?
That's what I do, yeah.
Fantastic. I don't think we've covered this topic much. Tell people who don't know the word what that means.
Basically, what I do is I work with families primarily of addicts and alcoholics who are resistant to the idea of getting help, people who need it but aren't necessarily willing on their own to say, you know what, this is what I need. And so the families will contact me, or the treatment centers that they're working with will contact me to bring me in to help organize an intervention to really provide an experience for the addict or the alcoholic, whoever we're working with, to create some motivation.
So in other words, if I've got a family member who's clearly hurting themselves with all the drugs and alcohol, and maybe it's slipped away and they don't realize how bad the problem is, they may not take the advice from me, hey, you've really got to get some professional help. Sometimes they need a stranger to come in and kind of say the same thing, and that has more impact?
Well, it does, because most of the time, families have been saying this for a while. They've been saying it, and there hasn't been a lot of follow-through. The family's losing credibility because, I mean, just even in my own life, I'm in recovery myself, and my family had to do this for me 11 years ago, and they've been telling me for a while before this that I needed some help, and I just was completely shut off to the idea because I didn't think I had to.
And when you say I have to, the thing that happened to you is what's happening to millions of other people. They think, oh, I've got this handled. Oh, the problem's not as serious as you're making it sound. Oh, I can stop whenever I want. Is that what they're thinking?
Those are some of the excuses that I used and other people use, absolutely.
Tell me what it's like for you. I mean, you're walking into a situation that is emotionally charged, right, where everybody is on edge. Is part of your job is just to play the peacemaker to make sure that a fight doesn't break out between the people who have the advice and the people who don't want the advice?
Sometimes. Most of the time, I mean, what I'm doing ahead of time is I'm preparing the family for what's going to happen on the day of the intervention. And obviously the goal is to get that person to agree to get whatever level of care the family wants to see them pursue. And by the time we get to the point where we've got the person in the room and we're doing the intervention, it's not so much about keeping a fight from breaking out. It's really about controlling the communication that's going on in the room, making sure that it's a level playing field, making sure that the messages are being sent and received in a way that really is most optimal for the person to hear what's being said.
Do you assign one family member to block the door? How does that work?
I have. It doesn't have to happen all the time. Most of the time, it's not that way necessarily. But I have done that in the past, absolutely.
Because I can imagine a lot of people would want to just leave.
They do.
Because they feel like it's an ambush, right?
Yeah,
I don't need to be here. I don't want to. It is voluntary. It's not like you're there with the police to cuff them and take them away, right?
No, but usually we try to assemble a team of people, whether it's family, close friends, where they're going to have the respect of the individual that we're intervening on, where at least they can show them the love and respect of, you know, let's just sit down and hear what the people in this room have to say. And at the end of this conversation, you can decide what you're going to do. You're an adult. We're not here to force you to do anything, but certainly we want you to hear what these people who love you want to say to you.
This is the voice of Matt Brown here on the Kevin and Bean Show. He is with a company called Freedom Interventions, which works nationwide to provide people like you, Matt, to help people go through the intervention process. We'll give out that number at the end of the interview. But for right now, if you want to talk to Matt, if you have a question you want to ask about interventions, about anything having to do with this topic, at 1-800 1-800-520-1067. 1-800-520-1067. Your chance to ask an interventionist. Tell me a little bit about your history. You said you are a recovering addict. What was your story, Matt?
Well, I actually used to live here in Los Angeles, and my addiction really hit its high point when I was here in L.A. I was working...
Because we've got the best drugs, man!
You're not kidding. I was working in the entertainment business and, you know, just slowly began to compromise the values. And I'm not here to say that drugs are bad or alcohol is bad. They're just bad for people like me who can't control it. And so it got to the point where I just couldn't control it anymore. I lost my job.
Was your drug of choice?
Cocaine, mostly. Mm-hmm. Alcohol, for sure. Pretty much anything you put in front of me. But if you put it all out on a table, that's really what I would choose.
Right. And when you say you were losing control, was it that you were spending too much time and too much money trying to chase that high all the time?
That's part of it. You know, the consequences were beginning to add up. And in spite of the consequences, I just continued my decline. I couldn't stop myself.
What is it you think that got you clean? Did you have a rock bottom moment, or did you start the process of fighting back before then because of an intervention?
Well, what happened was my I grew up in Arizona. And my parents came from Arizona knowing that I was about to hit my bottom here. You know, and most families are like this. There's some degree of enabling that goes on in every family. So instead of letting me hit my bottom, my family actually drove out from Arizona, picked me up here in L.A., drove me back to Arizona on the condition that I would stop using and drinking. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I thought this was a great opportunity to start over. I was gonna stay clean. I was gonna stop.
New environment, new friends, and you've got support of family and friends around you. They're gonna keep a close eye on you. You thought that's what you needed.
Absolutely. And within a week after I got back to Arizona, my parents woke me up one morning. They had a couple of suitcases in hand, and they said, "Son, we love you, but we're not doing this anymore." My mom said to me, "I'm not gonna be a prisoner in my own home for one more day." And that was the thing that kind of hit me, like. At first, I thought she was being dramatic, but looking back, I mean, I was holding my family hostage.
Let me ask you something. You were living in L.A. They would have had a sense of what you were doing, but they wouldn't really know what was going on. What?
I had a couple of really good friends that I had gone to high school with in Arizona who were living in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And without me really realizing it, they were talking to my family.
Oh, okay. And so they gave them the full picture.
They did. They did.
Interesting.
Okay. And you know, while I was angry about it at the time, those guys saved my life.
Because for a lot of families, you would suspect, but you don't really know. So, and
you know
how
bad
you
act it is sometimes.
If you
yeah.
don't really know what's going on.
They knew there was a problem. They certainly didn't know the degree to which it was growing and how big it had gotten.
Do most addicts, Matt, and maybe it's part of the effect of the drugs and alcohol, think I'm okay? Do they talk themselves into thinking, I can handle this, it's not too far gone, I don't need help? Is that part of what keeps them going?
It is, because we surround ourselves with people who feed that belief system. We surround ourselves with people who send that message to us. And, you know, of course, if we're around healthy people, they're going to call us out on it. But, you know, as we decline into an addiction, we're going to surround ourselves with like-minded people.
Right.
Right. What a fascinating topic. What a fascinating business. I want to find out more about it when we come back. Freedom Interventions is the name of the company. Matt Brown is in studio with us. He is the owner and founder of the company and a Kevin and Bean fan who offered to come in, and we're so grateful he did, for Ask an Interventionist. 1-800-520-1067. Your calls and a brand new Omar theme song that I can't wait to hear coming up right after this on K-Rock. Interesting. We should be playing a Sublime song here right in the middle of our Ask an Interventionist topic. Kind of brings into sharp focus what happens when you don't get help. You're listening to the Kevin and Bean Show here on the world famous K-Rock. Our guest is Mr. Matt Brown. He is the owner and founder of Freedom Interventions. We're taking your calls right now if you have a question about interventions at 1-800-520-1067. Hit it, Steve.
You could be addicted to a certain kind of substance. An interventionist steps in before it's the end. So we'll ask an interventionist, will you help us with our friend Kevin?
Oh, wait a minute.
Because we really think it's time to get him sober.
I don't know, so that's a toss-up.
We're gonna have to cut him off.
K-R-O-K-O-K.
Ask an interventionist, we want to know.
Are here to protect us, not hide? And how often have you used it?
Ask an interventionist, we want to know.
I need to do the Dave plan next time.
What?
I need to do the Dave plan next time. I'm not drunk.
How sad that Kevin's not here for Ask an Invention. You were hoping to be able to walk out of the studio with Kevin, weren't you, Matt?
That is rather conspicuous that he's not here for his own intervention.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I think that's why you contacted us. You realized we needed help on this show. All right. Let's get in as many calls as we can here with our guest. How about Stephanie to get us going? Stephanie was kind enough to call on line 6 and hold on to Ask an Interventionist. You're on with Matt. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Matt.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Lisa May.
Hi there.
Thank you, Kevin and Bean. I'm calling because my question is regarding a functioning addict. If you have a partner who doesn't think they have a problem, who holds down a job, who has a few friends, you know, how do you approach it? Do you stay close? Do you let go?
Well, to describe someone as a functioning addict, It's a difficult thing to try to decipher sometimes. Most of the time when somebody is in an addiction, they've surrounded themselves by people who are going to help facilitate this.
Right. I mean, I feel like, am I helping? Am I hurting? Am I...
And she's in a tough spot, as a lot of people are too, Matt, because he honestly may not think he has a problem. She honestly may think he does have a problem.
But
what do you do? What do you do with that when you guys are at different points of agreeing how bad the situation is?
Well, when you're in Stephanie's position, you really have to ask yourself, you know, do I want to continue living like this?
Yeah, like I'm in therapy, you know, I see a counselor, I'm working on my best self. She says I'm making the addiction my addiction now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What's your advice for Stephanie?
My advice would be for you to surround yourself. There are organizations out there like Al-Anon, Families Anonymous, where you can go and find people who are in the same situation that you're in.
Right.
And find a common solution. Your problem isn't necessarily your husband. It's the addiction. And Al-Anon or Families Anonymous or other organizations like that will help you engage in a program for yourself, not necessarily to change him, but to give you some tools to better manage your emotions, your decision-making process, so that you're not contributing to this.
Right.
And you know, you'll come to the solution on your own through those types of programs.
Thank you, Stephanie. I'm glad you called. We're going to take some other calls. Let's go on to Ellie now. Ellie is on line 4. She's got a question as we ask an interventionist. Go ahead, Elle.
Hi. My question's about my dad. He's an alcoholic and has been my whole life. And about 3 years ago, I wrote him a letter saying I love him, but I have to talk to him when he's sober because it's just too much for me. And now I have a lot of dreams about him, and I always think about him, and I always wonder if I did the right thing.
So in other words, you cut off contact with him. You don't talk to him anymore because he's a drunk.
Yeah. I mean, he has my phone number, and I said, just please contact me when you're sober, and we can start over. You know, it was a very supportive letter. And
what do you think of that approach, Matt?
Well, I think that if you look, I mean, again, talking about enabling, if you take away the enabling from an addiction, it's like taking away oxygen from a fire. Eventually, the fire is going to go out. And I'm not here to advocate for disintegrating families at all. But at some point when a family member is being affected to a degree that they're just not comfortable with anymore, and the person's not willing to engage in some sort of a recovery program, the healthy person in this relationship at some point has to say, you know what, I'm going to have to give them the freedom to make their choices and live with the consequences of those choices, but I've got to continue and move on with my life. And so for Ellie to be able to do this with her dad and leave the door open that should he engage in sobriety at some point in the future, she'd love to have that relationship with him. It doesn't sound like it's a permanent thing. She just wants to do it on healthy terms.
Gotcha. Yeah. Thank you for the call, Ellie. We appreciate it so much. Let's go to Mary real quick. Mary's going to broaden the scope of what constitutes an addiction. She's on line 3. Hi, Mary. You're on with Matt Brown. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. Lisa May.
Hi.
I have a question for Matt. My husband is very addicted to gambling, but it's also fused by alcoholism. So I don't know when the two combine, it's just driving the family nuts. We're married, we have children, and he surrounds himself with a bunch of people just like him. So it's kind of hard, even if we were to have an intervention, because I don't think he respects anybody at this point.
Mm. Okay. Wow, tough situation. So is your what's your specific question, though?
would we treat the gambling, or would it be the alcoholism, or would it be both?
It would really be both, because whether it's alcoholism, gambling, drug addiction, workaholism, exercise compulsion, whatever it is, it's just a vehicle. For an addict, reality is a very painful place to exist. And so we choose whatever avenue, whatever vehicle we can use to exit reality in. And some people choose gambling, some people choose sex, some people choose drugs. It really – it's just that. It's just the vehicle. And so when you look at it from that point of view, it's not so much about what the compulsive behavior is. It's about what are they trying to cover up by engaging in those behaviors.
And the toughest thing about interventions, I would imagine, Matt, that you probably hear from families all the time, because I know you offer follow-up care in the months after the intervention also, is that they find it difficult to shut out all of their former friends that were enablers, right? That they to walk away from the circle of the people you think you're closest to must be incredibly difficult for people.
It is. It is. But there are times where it just absolutely has to happen. We have to cut ties with those people that are going to drag us down and keep us sick. And
let's go to thank you very much for the call, Mary. Let's go to Jason on line 5. Jason has a great question, and he is on with Matt. It's time to ask an interventionist.
Hi. Okay. Guys, Lisa May.
Hi.
I have an aunt, and she's an alcoholic, and it's pretty bad. I mean, it's gotten to the point where, like, she's kind of just lost all sorts of shame for the sorts of things you do when you're drunk. She's made a mess of herself in public, you know, and it doesn't bother her anymore. And it's getting to the point where she's going to become homeless, right? She's losing all of her money. She's wasting it all.
She's just completely given up and just accepted that whatever bad things happen as a result of the drugs or alcohol, she's fine with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you do anything with someone who's given up, Matt? That's a great question.
Absolutely. And I think when it gets to the point where an intervention is necessary, most of the time that's the case. We were talking during the break about how a lot of us get to that point where we're just so beaten down. We can't fathom the idea that things are ever going to get better. And the idea of an intervention, when people think of an intervention, a lot of times they think of tough love. And they emphasize the tough but not the love part. And one of the things that I really try to do when I go in and do an intervention with the family is inspire hope in the individual that we're working with. I want them absolutely to know that everyone in that room, including me, cares about them and cares about what happens to them as a result of what we're doing. And sometimes that's enough when they're surrounded by a group of people who absolutely love them. They're not willing necessarily to continue living the way that they've been living, but they love that person and they want to see something better for them. And sometimes that's enough to inspire that person to make a better choice.
Are you mostly successful with your interventions in terms of those people getting clean and staying clean? Or is there just by nature of the work that you do a pretty high failure rate?
Well, about 90% of the cases that I work on, when you talk about just getting someone into treatment on the day of the intervention, about 90% of the cases that I work on will go to treatment on the day of the intervention. When that remaining 10%, you're looking at really two reasons why they don't go. Number one, they don't believe that the family actually is going to follow through with any of the changes in their behavior that they've committed to during the intervention. You know, a lot like my family, they threaten the really severe consequences, but if I made life uncomfortable enough for them, they would back down from the boundaries, the consequences, whatever you want to call it, and I would get my way eventually. And I think a lot of families find themselves in that position where they want things to change, but they can't maintain those boundaries without some help. The other part of that 10% are people who just are not ready to stop yet. Their relationship with whatever their drug of choice is stronger than the relationships that they find with their family, friends, and they want to just continue to use.
Name of the business is Freedom Interventions. What's the easiest way to get in touch with you if our listeners want more information?
The website is freedominterventions.com, and the telephone number is 888-762-7557.
Matt, and we have that for you here at K-Rock, too, if you didn't get it. But freedominterventions.com, easiest thing to remember. Matt, I know you've been a fan of the show for a long time. We appreciate that. Appreciate you reaching out to us. Now that you've been here, are you crushingly disappointed with the experience of being on the show with us, and will you no longer listen?
I'll continue to listen, but I am going to be taking beer mug to rehab.
Okay.
Fantastic. Thanks Come for coming on. By. Ask an intervention as we want to. Edith Clary from Huntington Beach, thanks for listening to the Kevin and Bean Show. We'll see you Monday live at the Red Bull Sound Space at K-Rock to see Green Day. It's going to be awesome. 3 o'clock Monday afternoon, plus a copy of the Green Day album Uno. We'll give you a chance to earn those tickets if you're a big Green Day fan. Coming up again in about 20 minutes. Lisa, I don't remember if we talked about this on the air or not, but did you see this story about this woman who's an amateur painter, painting restorer in, I want to say, Spain? Her name is Cecilia Jimenez. And she took it upon herself to try to repair this this very, very old painting of Jesus. Do you know the story I'm talking about? Have you seen this?
I do.
Yes. Oh, my God. It's unbelievable. And it's become a worldwide sensation because she took this picture of Jesus, which, granted, was in pretty bad shape. It definitely had seen some wear and tear over the centuries. And she took it upon herself to repair it. And she ended up painting something that doesn't look anything like the original painting on top of it. I mean, she essentially just ruined it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's considered to be one of the worst restoring jobs of all time. It's called a botched job, a crayon sketch of a hairy monkey in an ill-fitted tunic is how somebody described it. And she was completely despondent over this because she's just doing the best she can. By the way, 81 years old, this woman.
Who let her? What?
That is unclear how she got the job at 81 to have a hand steady enough to restore this painting of Jesus, this valuable painting of Jesus. But she apparently was despondent afterwards because there was so much ridicule and people were making fun of her because, I mean, she really did ruin this painting. Well, here's the reason I bring it up today. A little bit of an update now. Now that the painting is one of the most famous paintings in Europe, now that people are coming from all over the world to see this painting, now that they've got a box out there that people can make donations to the church where it hangs,
yeah.
She's got a lawyer and she's suing because she wants the money from the people who are coming to look at the painting that she ruined.
So tons of people are now coming to visit.
Yes.
Because it's funny.
Because it's hilarious because now Jesus is a monkey. Exactly.
And now she wants the money?
Yes, I'm so embarrassed at what a bad job I did, but oh, wait a minute, people are paying to come see it? Now I want me a piece of that. So we wanted to find out more about this story. We asked producer Dave, hey, what do you got for us in Spain? Could you get us Cecilia Jimenez? And I believe the 81-year-old painter joins us now on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hi, Miss Jimenez.
Bueno.
Bueno to you as well. How are you today? Thank you for being on with us.
My name's Cecilia Jimenez.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Yes?
Si.
Yes, I knew that, actually.
Yes.
And you are the lady who made the painting of Jesus look like a monkey.
I am the great artist that created the magical painting, the Beast Jesus.
The Beast Jesus, right, exactly, yes. So was there a point at which you were attempting to restore the painting where you realized it no longer looked like the original?
I was trying to restore painting. And then I make a better painting.
Well, I mean,
it's
certainly
better now. It's better now painting.
Certainly a different painting.
It's better painting.
Well,
you pay me. You give me money.
But I mean, most art critics are saying that you ruined it and that you should be prosecuted because you took this valuable work of art, this centuries-old painting of Jesus, and you basically painted something else on top of it. That's not what you were hired to do, right?
Yes, I make it better. Give me money.
So
a painting by Elias Garcia Martinez,
mm-hmm.
The original painting, is many year old.
Uh huh.
And nobody give no money for it to anybody.
Right,
now
you're right.
I go, I make painting, and thousands of euros come in for painting.
Yes,
I will make it better. Give me money.
Not better. It's
give
just
me money!
No, now it's a freak show, though. Now people are coming to laugh at the bad job that you did. That's what's happening here. It's not
people
a compliment.
People laugh at the bad job. It's like Kevin and Bean Show.
It's really more for sympathy than anything else is what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. People love to see bad work.
Yes.
And I make a success where there was no success before.
So you
give me money.
Now you painted Beast Jesus,
yes,
and you are
Beast Jesus.
You are suing. And how much of that money do you think is earned to you, Cecilia?
Beast Jesus is like Jesus is now Wolverine from X-Men.
Yes. That's not what people want to see, though.
Yes, they want Jesus with claws.
Well,
who
you certainly
can kick ass.
Certainly
give me money.
Different interpretation. You're not going to sue us for having you on the air today, I hope.
Yes, I make your show better. Give me money.
Oh, no. I'm not even actually sure about that.
Give me money.
Thanks, Cecilia. Great news for you, Ralph Garman.
What?
Your friend Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols, Jonesy's Jukebox here on K-Rock is here.
Jonesy's coming in?
He's going to be joining us right after the top of the hour. You know he's a rock and roll legend in his own right, well, right?
Yeah, Sex Pistols guitarist and...
Right, yep. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the whole deal. He is also the world's foremost authority on the band Green Day. Did you know that?
What?
He knows everything there is to know about Green Day. If you think you can stump our friend Jonesy with a Green Day trivia question, you call right now at 1-800-520-1067. If you stump Jonesy, you go into the drawing to win your way into the Red Bull at Sound Space at K-Rock this Monday to see Green Day up close and personal.
That's funny because I listen to Jonesy's Jukebox every Sunday night here at K-Rock, and I can't remember him ever mentioning Green Day.
He doesn't like to brag, but he's got the knowledge upstairs. 1-800-520-1067 will give you a chance to earn your Green Day tickets coming up next. Right now, Ralph's got the showbiz beat. What's going on?
Speaking of Green Day... Billy Joe Armstrong, according to the New York Post, has a thing for older women. Saturday night, he revealed he had a big crush on Sharon Osbourne.
Really?
Yeah.
Like a crush crush?
Crush crush.
Wow. That
he said he'd been watching her as her her gig as a judge on America's Got Talent, and he said he'd like to do naughty things to her. Billy Joe.
Yeah. I like Sharon a lot. Yeah. I have a lot of respect for her. I enjoy her.
Oh, yeah. I'd enjoy her. I'd enjoy Sharon.
I'm not eager to date her.
I don't want to date her. I just want to...
Right.
I want to zig a zig.
No, we understand. We got you.
She'd be nuts in bed.
She seems like a goer.
Sharon would be nuts in bed.
Yeah.
Forget about it. And especially after having Ozzy for all those years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Imagine what she'd do with a live person.
That's right. Imagine how appreciative she'd be of something else, something that moved.
Somebody who could give her a little something. You know what I'm saying? Oh, Sharon. I'm going to rock your world, Sharon. Forget about Billy Joe Armstrong.
Yeah, Billy Joe's got some competition now.
While we're talking music, this whole No Doubt resurgence, I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, it's great.
You going to the shows? You going to the shows? Gibson Amphitheater, end of November, beginning of December.
They're not playing enough shows for me.
They're doing six, I think. Six shows at the Gibson. Yeah. Up at Universal Studios. I'm going. I got my tickets. I'm going. I'm locked in.
Awesome life.
New single from their album Push and Shove. We posted it on krock.com. If you'd like to hear the latest from their album, it's called Looking Hot.
And I've got a clip. I've got a clip of you. I know it's up on the website, but I do have a clip for radio, too, if you want to hear some of it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
New No Doubt.
My vagina ain't handicapped. Vagina ain't handicapped. So what? I can't walk. My vagina ain't handicapped.
Gwen has not lost a step.
No, she sounds great. Glad her vagina's not handicapped. There's another single. That's one of them. But there's another new single called Looking Hot that we're posting on the website. Apparently, it is an ode to the paparazzi stalking celebrity culture. Lines like, go ahead, look at me. Because that's what I want. Take my picture, please. Gwen deals with the constant hounding the paparazzi gives her and her family. Here's a little taste from Looking Hot.
It's a sure shot. Are you under my con? Go ahead and stare. I'm a regamuffin.
Yeah!
I would never want the level of fame that Gwen Stefani has, would you?
No. No, I would not.
Ever, ever, ever.
But they continue to make good music, so I'm happy.
Yeah, sounds great. Sounds terrific.
Go to krock.com if you want to check out the rest of Looking Hot. Big controversy over there on TLC, the Freak Show Network.
Mm-hmm.
Folks who have given us Toddlers and Tiaras and Look Out, Here Comes Honey Boo Boo, whatever that show is called.
And The Chick with Two Heads. Don't forget about that show. Abby and Brittany.
This new show, Breaking Amish.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Getting a lot of controversy. Show's getting great ratings, by the way. About
Is it?
3 million viewers per episode.
Wow.
Monster ratings for basic cable. It's about five Amish and Mennonite people who moved to New York City from their Amish communities to see the world before going back into their culture. It's a phenomenon called Rumspringer.
It's pretty fascinating.
Rumspringer.
I can't believe anyone ever goes back, honestly.
Well, then you never see your family again.
Yeah, but you
and
get
it's
an iPod.
All you know. You grow up.
But you get an iPod.
But you feel cold and distant and disconnected from your people and your culture.
Right. but with TV.
Yeah, but that's not enough, man.
That's a replacement for your family.
So everybody's falling in love with the show, and they love it, and they want to see if the kids come back to the church and what it's like to be in the outside world during Rammspringa. Now we find out TLC is being accused of using people for the reality show, the five people they use, who have actually been married, had children, and gotten divorced since they began their journey away from their communities. So they're acting as if, oh, look at me, I'm all wide-eyed in this world of, oh, what is that? Oh, what is that? The gun of the hand. Oh, look at that, the hot dog vendor on the street. But these people have been out there, they'd lived a life, they've been married, had children, divorced.
No.
Since they began their journey away
from
the communities. Hollywood Reporter says the network released a statement saying, much of it is not true, but some of it is. This is the network statement.
Uh-oh.
Much of it is not true, but some of it is.
No bueno.
And it will be addressed in upcoming episodes.
Now that you've caught us
now
red-handed.
That you've caught us.
Right.
We have to do some creative editing, and we'll be back to you in just a minute. Hold on a second. I'll be right back.
Oh, that popular contestant on our show? He's not even Amish. We just made him grow a beard.
Breaking Amish is fake. No wonder. See, that's why the Amish don't like TV. Because it's fake.
Good point.
It's fake.
That's alleged.
TLC, such big liar.
They are such big liar.
Oh, that's such big liar.
That's right. Jack Sparrow stole a boat.
Excuse me?
Jack Sparrow, Captain Jack Sparrow, stole a boat.
That's a fictional character
from
the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, Ralph.
It happened
Check your
for
sources.
Real in England. A British woman has been sentenced to 4 months in jail after stealing a ferry while shouting, I'm Captain Jack Sparrow at the police.
What happened now?
You'll be surprised to know that alcohol was involved.
Huh.
Court papers reveal that the woman had been drinking for 2 days straight and was also eating nightshade plants, which is an hallucinogenic. Fearing she might be having a seizure, she called an ambulance, but ran onto the ferry and cast off after police arrived, shortly after police arrived, shouting, I'm Jack Sparrow.
You're drunk.
As the boat was drifting away.
So that's a toss-up.
The boat was towed back to shore, but not before hitting several other boats in the harbor.
Uh-oh.
Damage to the ferry was about $2,500. Damage to the other ships as well. The court handed down its sentence this past Wednesday, which, in a sweet, sweet moment of irony, was also Talk Like a Pirate Day. So it all worked out for the best. But poor.
Was it TLC that told us that she was Jack Sparrow?
No, this is a real story. Sadly, Captain Jack will be going to jail. But you can't keep Captain Jack Sparrow in jail. It's one thing I've learned from those movies.
That's right.
By the way, I looked at the mugshot of this British woman. Jack Sparrow's prettier.
Oh, ouch. Ouch.
She looked like a female beer mug.
Hey!
Drunk for 2 days, eating nightshade. Nightshade, is that even a thing?
I don't know.
Nightshades are like tomatoes and there's other vegetables. They're not unusual vegetables, but some people have real reactions to them.
Well, she was tripping out on nightshade, apparently, so good
times. I don't even know what that is.
Lisa's just making stuff.
No, I know this.
It's tomatoes, it's eggplants.
Tomatoes and eggplants are two of them.
You're describing a recipe for gazpacho. That's not nightshade at all.
Gazpacho. The lady has foolishly attempted to join the conversation with a wild and dangerous opinion of her own.
Exactly. We'll teach her. Today's celebrity birthday is movie and TV producer Jerry Bruckheimer, is 67 years old. Today, Stephen King celebrates his 65th birthday.
He can literally write books faster than I can read them.
He wrote a book while I was announcing his birthday. Cheryl Hines from Curb Your Enthusiasm is 47. Faith Hill, country singer, is 45. Ricky Lake, talk show host, again, is 44. Alfonso Ribeiro from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is 41 years old. If Psycho Mike was here, he'd be so happy I announced that birthday. He loves him. Luke Wilson is 41. Liam Gallagher of Oasis fame turns 40 years old today. Nicole Richie's 31. Maggie Grace from Lost and Taken, soon to be seen in Taken 2, is 29 years old. And Bill Murray!
Are you menstruating right now?
Yes, I am, Bill. And I love you so much. He is 62 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Hey, Jonesy. How are you, buddy?
Hi. How are you guys doing?
Good. Steve Jones, legendary guitarist for Sex Pistols. Yeah. We're lucky enough to have him Sunday nights here at K-Rock doing his show from 7 till 9.
I'm doing Jonesy's Jukebox.
That's right.
And you can tune in.
Mentioned, I already covered that.
Play music.
Hit the plug. Listen, we're going to ask.
Like new music.
Right. We also, okay. We're limited.
Stories about the good old days.
Lengthy stories. We are limited in the amount of time that we have, though,
of course,
here.
In the Sex Pistols back in right. those days.
Listen, Steve.
And other
we,
important moments from me career.
We want to give away tickets right now to join us at the Red Bull Sound Space at K-Rock this Monday for Greed. Let me handle this part.
All right. You, tell you what. You go ahead and you do what it is you need to do.
You are apparently a huge Green Day fan. You know virtually everything about the band, and we're inviting our listeners to call right now and try to stump you. Am I right about that?
Look, I've been in music for a long time, mm-hmm. and I've done my own work. And
certainly.
So if you think you can stump me, then you feel free to go ahead and try to stump me.
Green Day trivia,
1-8. I feel that I will be able to mold it.
Because you know the answers and they don't, right?
Hold my own when it comes to questions.
Understood, sir. Thank
about
you.
About Green Day.
Green Day, right. 1-800-5...
And the music that Green Day has 20 produced.
1067. It's time to stump Jonesy.
You can ask Jonesy whatever it is. He'll tell you right now. You gotta ask Jonesy if you want the ticket.
Song is oddly familiar to me.
But I'm sure you can't place it. It's like we had Johnny Rotten himself doing the intro. Very well done, Omar. All right.
Johnny Rotten.
Let's go to Chuck on line two
John
to get Lydon. Us going.
Lydon was his last name.
Yes, we understand that. Right. But we don't have time to really go into the history of the band right now. If
me,
you can stump Jonesy.
Sid Vicious, of course.
Okay. Try to concentrate. Try to keep up over here. Right?
Look, you invite me in here, and now you're giving me the bum's rush.
Well, it's just that I'd like to get a few calls on the air in the time that we have, Steve. That's
all. Right.
All right. All right. Chuck, you're on with Green Day authority Steve Jones. Can you stump him to go into the drawing to win tickets to see Green Day? Go.
Yes, I can. Happy Friday, party people.
Hey, thank you.
Happy Friday to you, too, Chuck.
Green Day's album, American Idiot, was made into a Broadway musical.
Yes.
Jonesy, what was the name of the musical?
Brigadoon.
I don't believe it was Brigadoon, was it, Chuck?
I do believe it was Brigadoon.
No, it wasn't. Sorry, Jonesy. It was American Idiot.
It was American Idiot. Same name. A little bit of a trick question,
well,
but he thought you might know that one.
That would be silly to name a musical after an album.
Well, that's what they did. Chuck, you're in the drawing. Thank you so much for playing. I appreciate it.
Let's go to Brigadoon. Story of a legendary village that only appears every 150 years in Scotland.
I didn't. But unfortunately, we don't have the time to go off on that tangent.
People who live there are like, hey, look at us. We're here. And
they
go back into the mist when
it's
all over.
That's fine. But let's go to line four now and talk
to... good, and you should find it and look
at
it.
Let's talk to Jessica. Jessica is calling us to try to stump Jonesy.
I think I slept with her.
don't have time to really tell if that's true or not. Jessica, you have a question for Steve Jones.
I do. My question is, what Sesame Street character was originally released on the back of Dookie, but got pulled because Sesame Street was going to sue Green Day?
Ooh, that's quite a trivia question. That's something only a true fan would know, Jones.
That was a long question. I forgot what she was saying about halfway through.
A character that was going to be on the back of the Dookie album, but then had to be pulled at the last minute because Sesame Street was going to sue them if they used it.
It got released with
it
the character on it, but it was a very limited amount, and then they pulled it.
Okay.
All right. I would have to say that character would be... Mm-hmm. Let's see.
Sesame Street?
That's
a hint?
Sesame Street, right. Sesame Street.
Which character, though?
Let me think. Sesame Street. Was it Spider-Man?
Spider-Man is not a... That's not a Sesame... Jessica, who was it?
It was Ernie.
It was Ernie, yeah. All right. Ernie. You're in the drawing. Thank you. You were able to stump Jonesy. 0-2,
Ernie's
Steve.
One of them homosexuals on that show.
Well, they say that he's asexual, but people read into.
He and his buddy Bert like to
They are roommates. They like leave it at just roommates. Well,
they're poofters, aren't they?
I don't think that's been established.
They've lived together for like 40 years.
Well, they're friends. They can be friends.
With a hand in their butts.
Let's go to Lauren. Well, they
somebody's
are puppets.
Somebody's hand is in their somebody's butts right. at all times.
Let's go to Lauren. She's on line 7. She's trying to stump Jonesy for Green Day tickets at Red Bull Sound Space here at K-Rock. Hi, Lauren. Hey. You're on the air.
All right, turn your radio down there.
Hi, everybody. Hello. This is May.
Hi there.
What's your question? So Green Day's bassist goes by the stage name Mike Burnt, but what is his original name?
His original name is Mike Hunt.
No, that's just the name you use for restaurant reservations, Jonesy. Is it Mike Hunt, Lauren?
No, actually, it's not.
I think it is.
What is it, please?
It's Michael Pritchard.
Well, that's not the same.
That is that's the case at all.
You're in,
not nearly as you are in as my answer,
the drawing. Unfortunately, Steve, we're out of time.
No way, we're not.
But it could
time.
Be Chuck. It could be
Listen,
Jessica.
On Sunday nights, I go
Lauren.
For hours and hours, and
I know you do. But
me.
Unfortunately, we run a tight ship. Or who's our winner, Lisa May?
Our winner is Chuck.
Yeah, Chuck. First person we talk to at My Two, Chuck. Congratulations. We'll see you at K-Rock this Monday. Great day it is. Thank you, yeah. Jonesy's Jukebox, for stopping by the Kevin DeBean Show today.
Congratulations, Chuck.
Sorry, Foster's not quite done yet. You're listening to the world-famous K-Rock. It's always a dying wail at the end of that song that's confused me. At 106.7 KROQ, you are not ready for the NFL weekend until you've gone to grantland.com every week to see Cousin Sal with his NFL gambling blog. He gives you all the things to look for and all the things to avoid. Grantland.com, phenomenal website run by our friend Bill Simmons. You can also see Jimmy, of course, on his Cousin Jimmy's show, weeknights at 11:35 starting in January, right now just after midnight on ABC. And of course, Sal, you're going to be with Cousin Jimmy at the Emmys this weekend. What's that been like preparing for that?
Oh, it's been a delight. No,
how
it's
they...
a lot of fun. And I think we have a really good crop of jokes. And yeah, it's going to be a good time.
We were talking to Jimmy yesterday. I was asking because he was telling us how tiny the room is that you guys are going to be writing in during the show. And I asked him if he was going to institute a no-fart policy. And he said apparently that's not possible when you're involved. It's like instituting a no-breathing policy.
That's right. I will not shut up. I will not show up if that's the case. It'll be no breathing for the rest of them. But for me, I'll be having a good time. But
what's
It's basically going to be 8 hours of Jimmy snapping at us for making stupid suggestions, I think, all day.
Yeah, I can't even imagine what that's like, especially when you know the show is live, you know, and it's 3 hours long. And let's face it, the way he uses you on the late night show is usually to annoy and terrorize people. And I don't know that the celebrities are going to be up for that like you like to do.
Well, what if I turned it around on Jimmy? Like, you know, depending on how I do with these early games Sunday, I may need a little extra scratch. And what if I told the jokes to TMZ like an hour before showtime.
Oh my God. I think he'd love it. I recommend it. I think that's a great idea.
He likes the prank more than anyone, right?
He certainly does. The Emmys are going to be Sunday night. They're going to be live on ABC. Now, are you going to be able to watch the Sunday night game at the same time you're doing the Emmys?
The Sunday night game is going to be tough for me. And it's I'm mad because I have a sure winner, too. There's 4-1 odds that Melissa McCarthy both wins an Emmy for Best Actress in a Comedy Series and makes a shoestring tackle in the Ravens. So I really want to watch, see if that cashes in. But
that does lead us into your picks for this week. How'd you do last week, by the way?
I was 2-1 against the spread. I think I'm 4-2 overall with you guys.
Not too bad. All right. So you are picking Baltimore -3 over the Patriots. How come? The Patriots, their good luck does not return this weekend.
And it's weird because, you know, Bill Belichick, Patriots rarely lose 2 in a row, but despite that, I think like the Ravens have more to prove. Remember, they were like a drop pass away from winning the AFC Championship against New England, and you know, I expect a lot of points in this one. I like it, 30-24 Ravens. Ray Rice breaks a touchdown late, and of course, I won't see a minute of it. So,
what is the problem with the Patriots this year? Why do they seem to be flawed? I mean, I know they certainly could have won that game last week, but what do they have a big problem, or is it just a bad patch?
No, I think they have it out for me because I said they were going to score 50 points last week, so they tried to teach me a lesson. But no, I don't know. There are like 8 teams in here who were completely different teams from week 1 to week 2. That's why week 3 is the worst for me. I should have prefaced that ahead of time because there's no telling which one's going to show up. Patriots looked great week one, and I thought they'd score 50, and they couldn't put it together at all, and it shouldn't be a problem. They have more weapons, I think, offensively than ever, and defensively. I love their rookies. So. But I think it's one more week before they get back on the horse.
The Dolphins are probably feeling pretty good this week. They don't get to win very often like they did last weekend over the Raiders. They've got the Jets up next. What's going to happen there?
These are another two teams, just Jekyll and Hyde routine from week one to week two. The rookie quarterback, Tannehill, looked good for the Dolphins. But this week he has half a field to throw there because Darrell Revis is the shutdown cornerback for the Jets. He's back. I like the Jets to wake up here. Tony Sperano, not the fat therapy-seeking gangster, is the former Dolphins head coach, now the offensive coordinator for the Jets. I expect a healthy dose of embarrassing Tim Tebow tomfoolery. 28-16, take the Jets giving two over the Dolphins.
You resisted the urge to make a pick on air with your beloved Dallas Cowboys versus the Seattle Seahawks, and I guess you're glad that you didn't embarrass yourself. Let's face it, almost no one thought Dallas would play as poorly as they did last Sunday.
And that was terrible.
Yeah,
I've seen them lose like to the good Packers teams. They get blown out and everything, but against a mediocre, maybe even subpar, I don't want to put it out there, team, they've never from start to finish looked so soft. And I give the Seahawks credit. They have some players on defense, but the Packers had 11 days to prepare for this, and I don't think it's a good matchup for Seattle. Green Bay doesn't present that vanilla defense that Russell Wilson's been used to the last 2 weeks. Packers, I think, open it up on their own. 24-13, give the 3.5.
I was a little bit surprised to see you only, Packers minus 3.5. I mean, do you think it's going to be a much bigger win than that, though?
No, I think they'll score late. I think it'll be a good close game up until the fourth quarter, and then the Packers open it up at the end.
And, of course, the Seahawks are playing at home, which really does make more of a difference probably for their team than almost anyone in the league in terms of that 12th man. Let me ask you one more thing before I let you go, Sal, because I saw some rumblings this week, and we haven't really had a chance to talk much about the NFL replacement officials. Is that at all affecting the lines on these games, or is it because it's spread out evenly on both sides, there's no way to kind of factor that in?
There's first of all, the overs are the play, apparently, with the replacement refs, because they're more prone to throw pass interference flags than the regular guys. And that's one thing you say. And the home team, I guess, for some reason, they get jarred by the crowd noise, and the home team has been covering more with these replacement refs, and the road team, I guess, is what I'm saying, is penalized more. So taking over and the home team when in doubt.
Are you factoring that in at all in your personal bets this weekend, the refs?
Yes, of course, of course. All they said was home team and over and that's all anyone had to hear, and everyone went crazy on the Panthers yesterday, and of course the Giants won. So
how about
nobody
that?
Nobody knows what they're talking about.
All right, recapping, and Cousin Sal is 4-2 on the season so far here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Jets -2 over the Dolphins, Ravens -3 over the Patriots, Packers -3.5 over the Seahawks, and you can see the rest of the schedule at the NFL Gambling Blog up at Grantland.com this afternoon. You always do tremendous work on that site, and of course, look for Sal probably on the TV with his cousin Jimmy Kimmel at the Emmys this Sunday night on ABC. Have a great weekend, Sal. We'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Bean is 47 Peter Dinklage jokes a lot.
I think it's just about right, Sal. You're listening to the world famous K-Rock at 106.7 KROQ. It's Friday.
Friday. Gotta get done on Friday.
Although I will tell you that Don't Bogart is way more of a Friday song for me than That Friday by Rebecca Black has ever been. That's the one that really says Friday to me is when I hear Don't Bogart. So that's coming up in about 5 minutes. First, though, Rob's got the showbiz beat. What's going on?
I heard she's turning tricks now at Rebecca Black.
Really?
I did not hear it.
I just heard it on the street. Huggy Bear told me that.
She's only like 14, Ralph, right? Oh,
well, she's turning tricks for preschoolers or something. I don't know. It worked out. It all worked out somehow for her.
She got what she deserved.
That's right. While we're talking about music, how about some good music? How about this new No Doubt single that's off of their new album, Push and Shove? It's cool. It's got like a 70s disco sort of electronic beat dance ska pop dance hall reggae thing going on. I dig it. Here is a little bit. We have it posted on the krock.com website if you want to check it out. But here's the latest single off of Push and Shove, Looking Hot.
It's a sure shot. Are you under my con? Go ahead and stare. I'm a regular fun. You think I'm looking hot? You think this is a spot? Now this is looking hot.
want to shake my groove thing.
I think it's hot. It's hot. It's hot. It's tight. It's a hit, man, and I like it. I'm going to go get it. That's a keeper right there.
I'm going to get on the dance floor and boogie, oogie, oogie when I hear that song. All right. Lady Gaga, she is ticking off people again. Started a couple days ago in London. She was at a Fashion Week show there in the UK when she appeared wearing a full-body burqa, complete with silk scarves covering her face and raccoon tails dangling from the garment. She also carried a rhinestone-studded purse that spelled out a certain four-letter word that begins with C.
The raccoon tails, that hasn't been a popular look since the Daniel Boone, Davy Crockett shows were on the air, right?
Yeah, I think Davy Crockett used to wear a coonskin cap,
back in the
didn't he?
50s or something.
Yeah. Well, the Muslims are mad at her. It's not even so much the burqa. They don't like the purse with the curse word on it being carried with a burqa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
A spokesperson for a Chicago Muslim group says that comes across as a clear insult to Muslims and Islam.
Well, I don't know that I'd say that, but it's not a good look.
And PETA's unhappy with the fact that she's got raccoon tails hanging off of her burqa. Some PETA activists are telling the Chicago Sun-Times they're going to try and personally attack Gaga. Here's the quote. Spray painting her or even throwing feces at her. Okay. You know what, PETA? It's game on. Start throwing feces. I'm going to get a fire. I'm going to get a flamethrower. And then we'll be even. That's what I'm thinking.
Seems fair.
Napalm. Napalm PETA. Someone make me a t-shirt up. Napalm PETA.
I think the way to go, honestly, is just to poison whatever food is within about 100 miles of Gaga, because she'll eat it.
Oh, come on.
She looks like she's gained weight.
Have you seen the photos, Ralph?
I have seen the photos,
Could
yes.
she be any fatter from the last time you saw pictures
ate
of
that
her?
That raccoon.
Sure she could be fatter.
No, but I'm saying compared to how she was 3 months ago, she looks like, no joke, she's gained 30, 40 pounds easy.
I am not a Gaga aficionado. I do not follow her career or see many photos of her, but she does seem chunkier than I've ever seen her before.
Yeah. Fatty.
So
maybe here's some chocolate fat, too.
Maybe that's why the burqa is her fashion choice.
Mm. Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe we should be thanking her for wearing a burqa.
Maybe we should. Amanda Bynes continues to impress. Tuesday, she was at her spin class at her gym when fellow class members say she stripped off her T-shirt, was wearing just a tiny black strapless bra, and started doing her makeup in the middle of the exercise.
Bat cray.
So that's good, right?
Where's the outrage there?
She's also announced she's given up her acting career. She's going to move to New York and launch a clothing line.
Okay.
Made of raccoon tails and burqas. Her staff, by the way, her crew, her team of management, lawyers, agents, managers, what have you, have all announced this week that they are quitting her. So she says, who cares? I'm not an actress anymore. I'm a fashion designer, so it doesn't matter.
Mm. Well, as a fashion designer, you still need a publicist and business people and things like that, though. But maybe she's going to get a whole new crew in New York, I guess.
People magazine said they tried to contact her, but they can't because she has no representatives, so it's very hard.
What's likely to happen to her when she gets in front of a judge today, or her people do, Ralph? Do we know?
I don't know. It happens today. She will face the music for those two counts of hit and run, one in April, one in August, that she was charged with. So, and the judge really, really sort of suggested she make a personal appearance. So I'm not sure what's going to happen. I'm sure TMZ will be following it very closely, though. We'll see. I hate when beautiful women cry. Unless I'm making them cry, of course. Diana Agron is very upset about having to leave Glee. Us Weekly reports that the producers are saying it was an amicable split. They both wanted to end the relationship. Diana's people are saying this is patently false, that Diana wanted to stay on the show and the producers gave her the heave-ho.
Why didn't they want her?
I don't know. I think they killed her in that car crash or something, didn't they? Or did they just cripple her? What happened?
I stopped watching.
I don't either. We have to ask Dave what's going
and
on.
And she's like 35.
She went to Yale.
She went to Yale?
Yale.
You mean on the show, she goes off
to school, Yale?
Yes.
But didn't she get hit in a car by a car?
Yeah, she was in a wheelchair for a little bit, but then she got better.
like you do.
Was she texting?
She was texting.
See, Dave, I told you. I'm trying to break Dave of his texting and driving
habit.
Wrong. But he won't have it. He won't
Dave.
Listen to her.
That's make-believe, dude, TV.
Don't text and drive, Dave. Do you ever see that one commercial, though? The guy's like, I can't put on my T-shirt because I was texting. You ever see that commercial?
I have not.
It's horrible. Not as bad as what I just did, but still, it's horrible.
It'll be Dave.
Dave can start on the next one.
He'll speak worse?
Is that possible?
Oh, not my fault.
I was toxting when a cur hot me. Pearl Jam's Eddie Vedder did a four-song acoustic set last night at a fundraiser for Barack Obama. What? Eddie is backing Barack Obama? I thought for sure he'd be a Mitt Romney supporter.
Huh, that is a shocker.
He also hit back at Mitt's comments about the 47% of Americans that think they're victims that are entitled to government help.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie said it was a government training program that helped him get a job as a security guard all those years ago.
Hmm.
He said he would have been pretty much SOL if he hadn't had that job to at least get him by until he could move to Seattle and join a rock band. He said he did that. He did it for a lot less money, but it all worked out in the end. But he said sometimes government training programs help people who are looking for to get some work. So.
Don't be the 1%, man.
That's right.
Be the 99.
Be the 47.
Peace.
Barack Obama, I don't know. I already got one wife telling me to eat healthy. Plus, he promised me death panels and Grandpa's still alive.
It's true.
Mitt Romney?
Yeah.
I hear he wears magic underpants.
Right.
I expect the leader of the free world to go commando. Mm-hmm. Plus, his horse totally choked at the Olympics.
That's going to be a factor when I go into the ballot box, I'll tell you that.
And lastly, here's an app that we can all get behind. It's called Brownout. It is a Google Chrome app from a Toronto music blog called Aux, A-U-X. That effectively removes Chris Brown from your web browsing experience. Producer for the app explains, it's nearly impossible to go on the internet without reading something about him. He's always doing something outrageously moronic. All we had to do was build a frame where it recognizes the word and ignores it and literally erases it. You can see everything on the internet except his name and face.
So in other words, if somebody you follow on Twitter tweets something about Chris Brown, it just won't show up.
You just don't get it. Just,
interesting.
Just brown out. Chris Brown is removed from your internet experience.
I like it.
Today's celebrity birthdays, Maggie Grace. We fell in love with her on Lost, and then we fell in love with her again in Taken. And I'm guessing we will love once again in Taken 2. 29 years old today. Liam Gallagher of Oasis turns 40. Luke Wilson, very talented film actor, is 41 years old. Which Wilson brother do you go for, Lisa? Do you
like yourself? I kind of like Owen.
You like your Luke or your Owen?
Kind of like
Owen's the butterscotch stallion,
he's got
right?
The funny that's nose.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
He's got a nose on him, that's for sure. Ricky Lake's 44. Faith Hill is 45. Cheryl Hines of Curb Your Enthusiasm fame is 47. Stephen King is 65 years old today. Jerry Bruckheimer, legendary director who gave us many motion pictures, including Flashdance and Top Gun. Then the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, CSI on television, 67 years old today. One of the most successful producers in all of Hollywood. And Bill Murray celebrates his 62nd birthday today. Love me some Bill. Looking forward to seeing him play FDR this fall in theaters with Moscow on the Hudson. Nope. That's a Robin Williams movie.
Yes.
White House on the Hudson. Camp David on the Hudson. Something about the Hudson. The Hudson Brothers. Hudson Hawk.
I don't even know what that is.
It's a movie. We'll talk more about it as it gets closer. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Thank you so much, Ralph. Oh, I guess we're getting right to that.
Yeah, I guess we'll do that now.
We have a huge show planned for you Monday, including
better sell
announcements. Never mind.
Don't bogart that joint.
Beer mug takes it upon himself to end the show.
Pass it over to me.
Being your dick.
Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
Oh my God! You say I have Asperger's?
Roll another one.
Whites only, is that it? You're a prick.
You're just like the other one.
Mitt Romney says
this
no.
One seems to be about to quit.
Come on, man, you're missing the point.
I need another hit.
Please get off your lazy f***ing Western asses. And think about the rest of the world for one goddamn minute. Stop worrying about your pathetic life and watching The Bachelor. No one gives a shit.
Roll another one.
Now, what songs do you do?
Just like the other one.
Don't you get it? I don't know.
This one seems to be about
Jesus Christ, kill yourself, would you please?
I don't have
this is America, isn't it? Then I don't have to answer stupid questions while standing on my own
property.
Tell me what it was like being in prison.
Just
Let's pass it around.
Wow, oh, I'd really like penis.
Well, don't go near that joint, my friend.
I count my strokes. I count my strokes.
It was an experience. It was a good experience. Well, it was an experience. I think I need to go home now.
Now go on. You heard me. Go on. Go on, scram. Go. I hate you. Go. Ah! Ah! Go back to your kind.
Farewell, our warning hosts. We hope you enjoy the show.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. I think we've all seen enough.